I hope you all had a lovely Labor Day this September 5th, and I'm working tonight. It's Patty Vasquez, because I figure it's only 1 hour left of the holiday, so technically if we were on the East Coast, my holiday would be over anyway. But I kind of decided that I would spend the day with my family and then come into work and spend it with you, spend the rest of our Labor Day. It was such a beautiful day, a little bit warmer, I think, than the last couple of days would have led us to believe. It was kind of a beautiful, nice, cool weekend. And today I spent time in the pool with my son. Griffin and I went to a friend's house. She has a great pool in the yard, and it made me really jealous of people who can do that. Although the maintenance, James Vickery joins me in studio.
Hey.
Did you have friends that had backyard pools?
I grew up with a backyard pool, actually.
You grew up with a backyard pool? Well, I'm jealous of you.
I know. Yeah. You should be.
All right, then.
It was great.
Wasn't it kind of a pain to keep it maintained?
It actually was.
Yeah. Although, then I'm not jealous anymore.
I will say, I liked vacuuming the pool. Like, that was kind of a cool...
Well, you can see the effects of your efforts.
Instantly.
Right?
Exactly.
So just getting it all cleaned up, get it all ready for everybody else, getting all those bugs. Was there a goal of how many bugs you would collect that made you feel powerful?
It was so, you couldn't count it. I felt if you let it go for a few days.
The carcasses of the bugs in your pool.
I loved it, being a teenager and having a, it was above ground.
Right.
South side of Chicago.
I would
pool.
Say the majority of Chicago pools are above ground.
I think you have to be, right?
Yeah. No, I think I've seen people. I've walked by yards, but they do always seem to have like a privacy fence, so maybe they're not supposed to.
And they've
built these fences to shield their guilt.
But people would come over, anyone who has a pool. So like when I was 13,
all your friends
from my class would come over. Girls and boys, the girls. But I was so insecure and stuff. I would swim with a t-shirt on,
my son swims with a t-shirt on, but it's like we call it a swim shirt. We've always had it for like UV protection.
Oh, okay. But
so
it's, like, it looks like it's for
the
water,
pool.
Not
so you'd
just
wear a t-shirt.
Random, white sock shirt that I'd wear.
You could be that big of a fan. I can't take this shirt off. I have to get in the pool with my white sock shirt. By the way, my condolences for the season.
Yes, thank you. You're
welcome.
About a month and a half late.
They look promising today, and then it didn't turn out well.
No.
I feel like I have a little too much gloat in my voice when it comes to the Cubs. Yeah. I'm not trying to, though.
I find myself in an odd place.
Why? Are you happy for us? A little bit? No, you're not.
I can't say happy for, but I'm not. So my dad, was the biggest baseball fan I ever knew.
Mm-hmm.
Huge White Sox fan, and was buried with the White Sox pennant and hated the Cubs. He just did.
Oh.
Even though he followed, he just was not a Cubs fan.
To that extent.
Yeah, to that core. And I'm not like that exactly, but there's part of me that just can't. Like, he would be so miserable.
I think that's fair. I think it's noble to not give it all, not an inch. We don't have to fight about it.
No.
But I respect that. I respect not feeling good for us.
But they're so good. I mean, they're ridiculously good.
That's a little bit of envy, is what
that is.
Totally. It's kind of like being envious of my friends who had pools in the backyard.
Yes.
I see what's happening now.
Absolutely. You had a pool day today?
We did. We had a pool day. It was so much fun. Plus, she has like, it's nice now as an adult. I mean, you liked using the rafts, like the adults' rafts, and kind of lounging, but also became like a battle to like tackle each other. And
right.
How many people could get on and flipping each other off. But those are, and they've come such a long way with cup holders and leg rests and
like
the pillows,
radios, TV.
Oh yeah, but we were definitely soaking in. I think it's important in these last few weeks of warm weather to really take all of that in, because you have to store it up, take mental pictures of it.
It's so funny. I was at a friend's house tonight, like a little barbecue. Mm-hmm. We were talking about this. I love late summer in Chicago, and one of the things I love about it is we talked about this was like. It kind of forces you to appreciate every moment.
Yeah.
Because you know it's fleeting. Like, this this is ending. And so you're like, summer.
It will get away from you faster than you know. It will. Yeah, it just sort of, it's very important, I think, for everyone, no matter how muggy it is. Because, like, today was a little sticky, and it felt good, because I was like, it's September. It's sticky.
Right.
This is amazing. It felt good to get into the pool. Ugh. And then when you get into a pool, too, you also become acutely aware of cloud coverage.
Mm-hmm. Right. Like, what happened?
And all of you are like, I'm cold. I'm hot. I'm cold. I feel manic almost in the water.
Right.
It was a lot of fun. Plus, what kind of games did you play when you had with a backyard pool?
Marco Polo
was popular.
It was a big one. We played a game where we'd throw a tennis ball off the wall, the back of the house, and try to catch it in the pool.
That's a good one.
Those were the two big ones. Or... you get a bunch of people and try to create a giant whirlpool.
I have video of there was a last day of school party for my at the same pool, and all the kids were in the water and doing that whirlpool thing. And it was when I really appreciated that I have my son wear the swim shirt because it's fluorescent, so I'll know if he ends up being in the bottom of that and trampled at the bottom of this whirlpool.
Oh, it's scary.
It's like, aggressive.
It's aggressive and scary.
Yeah, I mean, like the whirlpool action. I don't know if any Esmeralda, do you ever do the whirlpool in a big?
Oh, of course.
Yeah, I don't remember.
That was some work.
It was. It's good exercise, some resistance. Dan Norton, did you ever do the big whirlpool, do the big circle?
Yeah, I love that. That is so cool.
It's very fun. It's one of those memories that I videotaped it, so I was glad to have it.
But
I think everyone needs to take mental pictures of it. I think that we should go do, as adults, we need to go make a whirlpool somewhere.
Absolutely.
That would be frightening.
Why?
Because we're a little stronger than we were back as kids.
Can you imagine what kind of force we could create?
Well, you try to turn around and swim against it, you know, and you can't go.
All of that seems amazing.
I had older brothers, so like when I was 7 or 8, they were like 17 and 19, like they're much older. And so it was them and their friends doing it. I was like the one kid.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, yeah, it's like a near-death experience.
What?
it would get so strong.
Well, and that is the thing that I try to remind people, how dangerous water is, you know, because it just seems like you're having a good time. And yeah, you got to be aware of those things. But it's so many great memories in pools. I love being able to like making flips. Did you ever do flips, Esmeralda, where you just over and over, see how many you could do?
No.
Like just, you know, you just ball up and go forward. And
underwater?
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Yeah, I kind of did that. Yeah.
Or else like my friend and I would like do see how long we could be underwater.
Yes.
Like doing tea parties under. I don't know if you did tea parties.
Not tea parties.
That'd be weird. I know, like miming underwater and see how long we could stay down there.
My thing was how many times you could go back and forth underwater.
Yes.
And, you know, holding your breath. Yeah. And that's what I was best at.
That's what you were best?
Absolutely.
Handstands were good. I never liked chicken. Chicken always seemed like a recipe for disaster.
It does. You're already practically falling out of the pool. Like it's a small little above ground pool.
Yeah, I that's the one where I become the mean mom at the pool party. Nope, no chicken. Right. They're not doing that. Why'd you laugh, Dad? Because I said it was a recipe for disaster, playing chicken. Don Norton was, I think he snickered.
hold my beer and watch this. You know, that's not going to work.
Well, especially you've got someone sitting on your shoulder. Dan, did you ever play, Dan Long, our producer tonight, did you ever play chicken?
Yes, oh, yeah, we used to play chicken all the time.
Yeah.
People on your shoulder.
Yeah, you have someone on your shoulder, you're wrestling.
You just fight.
That can't be good.
No, well, especially in a pool, an above ground pool. Next thing you know, someone's being flipped. We go from waterborne to airborne.
Right.
Yeah, no, these are bad decisions that we've made, and yet we made it out of the 80s.
And none of that happened today, right?
No, it was very, there was a lot of flotation devices. Yeah. And there's a little, one of the, my friend has a daughter who's 5 years old. And so it was a lot of her exploring things. It's also fun having, Griffin's now 13.
Oh, yeah.
And so his best friend has this 5-year-old sister. And so it's kind of fun, you know, enjoying things through the eyes of a 5-year-old girl, you know, trying to figure out if you can balance on a kickboard, not really understanding that it's going to sink.
Yep.
It's not gonna, she's like, I'm surfing. No, you're sinking. And then like the sort of also trying to learn how to go underwater and be able to endure the, you know, water in your eyes, the shock of that. How old do you think you were when you were able to go underwater without getting it up your nose? It's a crucial moment in life.
This is almost, I almost hate to admit this.
What, you see the water?
Is this live? Is this on there?
No. I'll admit something.
I still often hold my nose.
Me too.
Go ahead. Yeah, Esmeralda, you still hold your nose?
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I physically hold my nose.
I wore a nose plug.
Oh, okay.
I told you I would go more embarrassing than you. I was that kid with the nose plug. Dan, did you ever see that kid with the nose plug?
I may have owned one at some point in my childhood.
I was very proud of my nose plugs. That's problem solved. Don Norton, did you ever use nose plugs?
I did not. I wish I did, though. Right? You're getting water up your nose. That's just going to happen.
You do?
Yeah, you get water. The nose plugs were very handy.
I don't understand what people do. How do people just jump in haphazardly not holding their nose?
Oh, I can do it now.
Can you?
Yeah.
You just blow out.
No, that's, you don't.
Exactly,
Esmeralda.
Right.
I don't know.
There's no blowing out.
It just becomes an instinct. I don't know how. I don't know what happens. It's like you just close it. I don't know.
What? Yeah, with your fingers.
No.
Right.
312-981-7200. We're talking about our memories of summer. Right now we're talking about, you know, fun times in the pool. What are you enjoying this summer? What memories are you holding on to? And or, you know, are we helping you remember that you have to hold on to those make memories?
Sure.
Let's make some memories. More after this on 720 WGN. Give us a call at 312-981-7200. You can text us as well. 312-981-7200. More in just a moment. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Joining me is comedian James Vickery. He is appearing at Zany's on Wells this entire week, and we'll actually be working together at Zany's starting tomorrow night.
That's super fun.
It is. I'm very excited. So go to zanys.com for more information, and we'll be giving away tickets for the shows as well. I have to figure out. You were just mentioning what we're going to talk about later about letting everyone win. I can't let everyone win tickets to Zany's. That would be mayhem.
No, it would be mayhem.
That would be complete mayhem. We have Don Norton up in the news, Esmeralda Leon, traffic, and Dan Long behind the glass. I haven't seen you in a while. How have you been?
It has been a while.
How was your summer?
Quick.
I know. But it was this has been an interesting year because the weather for me often defines how I experience obviously the seasons. That makes sense that it would go that way. But I mean, if we had a winter that was pretty mild and the summer had some hot days, but for the most part, it was wonderful. We had a record corn growing season this year?
I did not.
It's kind of ridiculous. I know that because Esmeralda is growing high and tall down in Streeter, Illinois. Esmeralda, you are still just towering over all the other stalks of corn.
Yay! But I win at something.
Yeah, well, you get your stalk of corn. I will bring that to you.
I can't wait to dry it and hang it. A decorative thing on my door.
We will find something artistic to do with it. I assure you, we will think of something clever. And Don Norton, how was your summer?
I had a great summer. It does seem to go by so fast, though.
And I shouldn't say was. Let's say, is your summer going,
it's
sir?
It's going well, and I'll take summer as long as the weather holds out. I think through the end of September.
I say we ride this bad boy until November.
Let's ride it.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
No?
I want some fall.
Oh.
I wore a sweater a couple days ago, and it was exciting.
Sweaters are exciting.
It was short-lived, too, wasn't it?
The Esmeralda Leon story.
Do you get it? Is fall your most exciting weather for fashion? I mean, as far as what you look forward to putting back on?
Oh, my gosh. I bought 2 sundresses today, and I'm excited to put sweaters over the tops.
Oh, that'll look nice.
With tights.
She's all ready to go for fall.
Yeah, I'm not even thinking, like, I can wear these now. I'm like, no, I can't wait to put a sweater on top of this.
No, I do. I like sweater and boots. For me, it's sweaters and boots and some of the jackets, all that stuff.
Big fan. All the yeses.
And James, you were telling me off the air that your wife has gone. Is she still in Baton Rouge with family?
She is. Yep. So leaving tomorrow.
So obviously there are a lot of her friends and family who have been struggling with the results of the tragic results of the flooding.
Yes. One sister in particular. One sister, her house is just devastated. Oh. You know, they're renting it, but they had to do all the work, and they're still, you know, things to be hashed out. They're just staying in her parents. But right now, she said she's never seen anything like it. The house is just, and the house I've been in, you know, fully furnished. They hosted a cookout there once.
Right.
You know, and now it's just completely gutted. Like, no rooms. There's beams that would be.
They
rooms.
Just strip it down. Take
just
all
completely
the drywall, everything down to the studs.
And it's hard. It's one thing to, like, hear that. Like, oh, that sounds. But, like, to really just see it and experience it, you know, like, just picture your house just completely gutted. No stuff inside.
Wow.
And their subdivision, there's 298 houses, and all of them went through that.
Really?
So
do you know if any of them have had to be destroyed, like taken down?
I haven't gotten that sense yet, like completely, but just completely gutted.
Right. You have to take it down because of any mold that might come in.
Right.
Obviously, the water could be, for the most part, was not clean. I mean,
right.
You have sewage coming into your house. Oh, I mean, what a horrible way to have to start all over again, too.
Yeah. And then there's this things, I think we talked about this before, but it's like, you know, there's things that just truly can't be replaced.
No.
You know?
Never. No, so. And how long ago did the flooding happen? About 2.5 weeks ago?
That sounds right. Yep.
Is that about? Yeah, it was. And it was one of those kind of silent or quiet stories that emerge. And
Truly, people
were upset because they were like, well, this isn't being covered the same way as Katrina was. But the thing about Hurricane Katrina was that there were people, you know, then were stranded.
Right.
I mean, this was an immediate trying to rebuild and gut houses and things like that. The floodwaters seeped in over the course of 24 hours. And how long, do you know how long it took for the waters to recede? How long were they?
I don't really have a sense of that. I feel like within a day.
Right.
But, I mean, you know, obviously once it reaches your kitchen counter.
I mean, just if anyone has had their basement flooded, you can imagine what it would be like to have everything up to your second floor,
mm-hmm.
to where you live your life and have the waters rushing in and seeing your entire, everything that you've ever earned as far as material goods.
Yeah.
Just washed away.
I was talking to her earlier, too. There's some, there's just some thoughts to talking to some friends and things going on in the local media there where there's some concern about places. Like, is this going to be a situation where some things never rebuild?
Right. And I would imagine, and you hope that they do rebuild, and also it's an opportunity to build new things,
yes.
too. Because mm-hmm. Joplin went through that, and they had, when their tornado came through and the tremendous loss of life there, I went there a few weeks afterwards. They wanted to bring comedy about 3 months afterwards. They mm-hmm. they hired me and April Macy to come in. And people were coming up to us that had lost friends. There was one guy who came in and was at the bar and said he was so happy to laugh again. And he said, I'm just waiting for my daughter. And one of the other women from the audience came up to me and she goes, his daughter died in the tornado.
Oh, man.
He hangs out with us to kind of still have a piece of her. But when I was traveling there, I mean, they still had just piles of debris and remnants of these homes. And I went back a year later, and a lot of things had been rebuilt. New hotels, new homes had been built, but there were still stretches, blocks and blocks of homes that will never come back.
Yep.
You know, I mean, people just, and trying to rebuild your life. And that's why it's important to figure out. I know that we never want to think that something bad is going to happen. I don't even know how you, there's no way to really plan for flooding to destroy your house. There's nothing, you know, what do you put aside? What do you, you know, how would you even protect the things that you have from that situation?
No, there really isn't. And in this case, there was no prep time anyway.
Right.
You know, it just kind of happened.
Right, because it's not even a heavily flooding area.
No, definitely not.
No. And you and your wife are living, well, you're living part-time in Los Angeles.
I am.
It seems like you're more there than you are now lately.
I am. Yeah,
I'm not being James Vickery, greedy, but I've noticed your absence quite a bit.
I know.
In this town.
I spent a good amount of time in Los Angeles, and I was thinking about that as we were talking about the seasons and stuff. I do love fall, and it's weird. There's this weird feeling in LA where it's like it's always. Here's the secret, guys. It's always summer.
It is always summer in Los Angeles. It's kind of ridiculous. Although it was crazy hot this year. This summer. I saw it was getting up to like 112 degrees.
There were some crazy times there, yeah. But for the most part, it's always like, oh boy, it's not going to be sunny and warm anymore. What are you kidding? Of course it is. Like, that's...
Don Norton, you got to see when it rains in L.A., like everyone just cancels their day.
I used to live in L.A.
Oh, you did?
I lived there for almost 10 years, yeah, in the 80s.
Yeah, I don't get the driving thing. If it rains, they're done.
It's better that people stay home in L.A. when it rains.
Yeah, so the roads
just,
are clear?
Yeah, they don't get it. And, of course, there's, you know, the little oil on the surface and gets a little wet, and then you got oil and water, and then people are skidding all over the place.
Plus, it's an excuse to stay inside. That's my biggest problem, I'll be honest. There's nothing better than me, like a cold Chicago rainy or sleety day when you're like, well, I can't do anything, you know, just stay inside.
I know.
And
there
watch
is
TV and stuff.
That cuddle, kind of
yes.
cuddle factor. Even
cuddle.
If it's just, yeah.
Cuddle weather. If I was a weatherman,
cuddle
that's
weather.
What I would call it.
Cuddle weather. Go ahead.
No cuddle weather in L.A. Yeah. It's like hiking weather every day.
Great, you know? Great sunsets, though. Sunsets
great sunsets.
It's almost too much pressure in Los Angeles that it's always nice. And if you're not doing something and appreciating it, you failed that day.
I mean, truly. Like, it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon and you just watch TV. Or like, you'd feel terrible about yourself.
I did not appreciate the sunshine. Don, you sound that you're laughing as though you let many days slip through your fingers in Los Angeles.
The beach is there. The mountains are there. You should go do something, you know, but then you have to go do it. And
that sounds like a lot of stuff.
What area in Los Angeles did you live, Don?
I lived in the Valley, Sherman Oaks.
Okay, wait a minute. Why is there a huge, like, is there supposed to be a bicycling thing happening
gosh,
right now,
right.
Esmeralda? There's about 200, 300 bikers going down Michigan Avenue right now.
out
I'm not
of the
even
blue.
Kidding. Just
it's Monday,
and just, there was no traffic concert. Nothing.
Just random. No, this is a significant number. What would you say? We're at like 300 people right now.
400 people.
Yeah, we're guesstimating. Well, because here, if there's like, let's say there's 30 right there, and it keeps going, so there's another. Yeah, I'm gonna go with Dan Long. What would you say? That's a lot of bikes.
A lot of bikes.
Yeah, it's a not insignificant amount of bikes.
This seems like some sort of silent.
It's not normal.
Seems like some sort of silent protest. I mean, how do you get in front of traffic?
What is happening?
And make that happen? All right, it's over.
But there's still cars like behind
that just
them.
Happened. So if you are on Michigan Avenue and you are traveling southbound, there are about 300 bikes ahead of you if you are approaching the river, the Chicago River. So that's happening. They've just crossed the Chicago River. I'm trying to get ahead of this traffic moment. Yeah, there's no more bikes. Oh, look at that poor guy trying to catch up. Wait for me.
Oh yeah, there's
the weather copter going. Traffic.
Oh, there's another one. That poor guy could not keep up with them. I don't know what just happened.
It wasn't
James.
Like an organized thing. It was just like, was it just everyone? Hey, let's go ride bikes.
Well, I mean, like that's a lot of traffic that can't go anywhere. But they were at a good pace.
They were
at a very good pace. So that is on Michigan Avenue. I'm not sure if they're going to continue on that path. What the goal is? That seems like a silent. We're just going to do this flash mob bicycle moment.
Yeah, I'm not seeing anything in general. It's not a critical mass.
It seemed like traffic is still moving on Michigan Avenue.
And they were not nude. It wasn't the nude.
I was a little bit disappointed by that. I was kind of thinking that might be the next thing. All right, let's take a quick break here. Do you have a break? Oh, wow, that was loud, Dan. Nobody else heard that but me. He was like, no, don't go to a break. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. I'm joined by comedian James Vickery, who is appearing at Zany's on Wells starting Tuesday night, tomorrow night. We will be there together, actually. Do you know who's emceeing for us?
Vince, I think. Vince Maranto.
James Vickery and I will be at the Zany's on Wells. Go to zanys.com for ticket information. Today is, in just a little bit, in the next how many hours? 8 hours, kids are going to be going back to school.
Yes.
And Well, I know that a lot of kids in the Chicagoland area have already gone back to school. Chicago Public Schools start the Tuesday after Labor Day, always have. I wonder if we are the latest. I'm guessing there have to be other school districts around the country.
I would think so.
But my experience is that so many of the schools start in August.
Like absolutely.
Sometimes the first or second week of August. Is that better? Is it better to start earlier and be able to end earlier?
I'd rather start later.
Yeah. Well,
summer.
You and I are CPS kids.
Exactly. Grew up in the street. Yeah. Book schools, yeah.
Yeah. There's something great about being able to start after Labor Day, have that as your defining timeline.
And we didn't have air conditioning.
Oh, don't even get me started.
Right.
Yeah, we did not have Lane Tech had no air conditioning at the time. I think that they may have changed that. There's been a lot of remodeling over there.
I think so, yeah.
And we weren't allowed to wear shorts either.
Nope.
So if we went late, first we would get out in mid-June. But if there were strikes... If there was a teacher's strike, we would go all the way to the end of June in just the blistering heat.
Yes, it was terrible.
I think that they started changing the dress codes because so many schools were without air conditioning. I know at Griffin's new school, they sent out a newsletter saying that they have also kind of loosened the restrictions on the dress code, and they can now wear sleeveless shirts. So I'm guessing that means tank tops.
Oh, like right? For everyone?
James, you sound disappointed by that. I'm not sure everyone should be going without sleeves. I think they were allowed to wear certain length of shorts, and they're bringing that up to the knee or something like that. So
how are your kids? Is it? I think about that. I mean, you talk about a night of dread. At least I felt that night before you have to go back to school. I mean, you think of an official end to something.
I know. I heard Esmeralda and Carm talking about this earlier, and the. Sort of approaching it as the beginning of something, getting to start all over again.
Right. I liked it because I got to wear a new outfit. Like, that was the whole thing. Like, oh my God, what am I going to wear that first day?
I do appreciate that part. And also the school supply shopping and figuring out what sort of system you were going to go with.
Because
I was like, do you do the 5 subject notebook all together? But then how many subjects? Do you do the... that you combine them.
Is
you
there
do folders.
Paper
in the
notebook?
Gonna be more pencil or pen? I don't know. You know that part was fun.
I don't remember that. I don't remember like trying to figure out the system. I think I just kind of I didn't like to show up. I liked shopping for school supplies, loose leaf notebook paper, my binders. I maybe had a trapper keeper. I kind of think I was a slob. I think
yeah,
I just kind of
like you're
I kind of
disorganized.
I think it's safe to say I did not come into my school year very, very organized. But Griffin is, I'm worried that we might be over organizing him and sort of Steve has been sitting out with the map of the school and where his classes are and what his plan of attack should be with when do you get this book and when do you get this folder.
Because he's starting high school.
Yes.
That's crazy.
Is he far? Like, is his locker really far from wherever he's got to be?
I think that the locker is centrally located, but there are a couple of classes that are at opposite ends of the building at one point. And I know that Steve has a similar experience that I did. We both went to massive high schools. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to follow along and be emotionally invested. I went to Lane Tech.
Right.
We had a 4-minute passing period with over 6,000 people in my way. So one of the things I did was start working with Griffin on how to make your way through a crowd. So, because I am really good in a crowd, I have no problems weaving my way.
It's going to serve him well at music festivals.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is a skill that I carry through airports at concerts, definitely at all kinds of festivals. It's partly anticipating the movements of others, which can end badly sometimes. You know, because you will sometimes step ahead of somebody. Because not everybody obviously follows what the flow of traffic should be. You know, it's like driving. You stay on the right. And you pass on the left. Gosh. Slow people on the far right. What
are you
else?
Kidding me?
No, I know. High school students.
No.
I know.
People in general. You walk down the street and no one understands.
Pedestrian rage is real.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no. I have plenty of it.
People who come to a sudden stop on a sidewalk.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Or the family of five that just creates a wall.
Yeah, I really, the being unaware of personal space is maddening.
Oh, it's my biggest pet peeve. I'm not even kidding. Yeah, just like not being aware
of those around you.
And it starts in school.
It starts in school.
I'm glad you're doing that.
Keep the flow of traffic moving. Yes, I'm working with Griffin on how to manage a big crowd.
My experience was that was a pretty... that was a jarring day in my first day of high school because it's a pretty big leap.
Yes.
Eighth grade, at least in my school, I went to a public school, like you're lined up, to go to classes. It's pretty
organized,
very organized.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden you're just the chaos of high school. You got different classes and
you're thrown in there, thrown to the wolves.
Yes.
Were you in a
taking
different,
the bus?
Were you in a different school?
Oh, yeah.
Eighth to ninth.
Yeah.
So was I.
Yep.
It was. Yeah. It was frightening.
Yeah.
Because you're at the bottom of the totem pole.
Absolute bottom of the totem pole.
Starting all over again. And we found out because Griffin is actually in one of he's in seventh grade starting high school tomorrow. And apparently they throw pennies at these kids because they're in this program.
Oh, yeah.
It's an accelerated program where they sort of merge them into the high school experience. Mm-hmm. So apparently the high school students throw pennies at them to remind them they're not as good as – you're not better than us just because you're younger.
Oh, yeah. And when you're 13, 14, those 17-year-old seniors, they seem like grown-ups.
Wait a minute. Are they throwing these pennies? Like, is this a school-sanctioned thing?
No.
Yeah, the principal's doing it.
I'm like, yeah, no, when you walk in, they're all standing in our line.
Well, Griffin and his friend were talking about what they were going to bring Ziploc bags with them and collect the pennies and then use them for donations.
You should have him watch.
That seems like it's going to... bring on more pennies.
More pennies.
Yeah.
They're out there with a net.
Right.
They're like, here, throw them at me. Yes, Ez?
You should have them watch the beginning of Dazed and Confused.
Oh.
Just the beginning.
That's
or maybe
the paddling?
Edit it out.
Is that the one with the paddling
yeah,
with
all the kids,
Parker
yeah,
Posey?
Like they're getting all the Posey? Kids, all the ninth graders.
Oh, no. That's traumatizing for me to even think about.
Oh, I know.
Especially because most of the kids in the program are 12, 13, and 14. Like, they're 12 and 13.
That's amazing, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. I know.
I was on a... bus coming home, first or second day of high school.
Mm-hmm.
It was hot and around this bus, and then it's crowded. I was standing. I'm one of the smaller kids. I'm just trying to hold on to my bag, hold on to the rail. It's packed. And all of a sudden, a fight broke out.
How do you
it was
evade that?
There's no way. You're just in it.
You're just in the Oh, James.
That was my first day of high
school. What a traumatic experience.
Oh, it was a traumatic experience, yeah.
Did the bus driver pull over and empty the bus or anything?
Honest to God, it was a city bus, and I felt like it just kept going.
It just
kept,
really?
Yes.
Was there one person that would seem more aggressive and
it was
pummeling
two guys,
the other person?
And it was, everything kind of separated, and these two,
Just went at it?
Just went at it. And I remember years later seeing them. I just have that moment was like embedded in my brain.
Yeah.
And like 2 years later in high school, now I'm, you know, a junior, whatever, seeing them, they're probably seniors, in the hallway, like glare at each other.
Still.
Yes.
Years later.
Yes.
There, that was, I think, you bring up something interesting because I was thinking about this the other day when I first went to Lane Tech. Now you have people from every part of the city mm-hmm. with their different experiences. I'd been, you know, sort of sheltered in Norwood Park and knew everybody. I had transferred into a different school, but for the most part, you kind of got the rhythm of what the people from your neighborhood right. are like and that experience. And all of a sudden, and I graduated from a class of 17, and wow. I went into a class of 1,750. It was one of the largest classes at
That's
the time.
Huge.
At Lane Tech had they would kind of vacillate with how many kids they wanted to take in, and that mm-hmm. was one of the bigger. And we lost a lot; like they lost over 700 students over the course of 4 years. But yeah, I went from a class of 17 to a class of 1750, and I remember standing out on that front lawn. Like it was a beautiful sunny day too. It was really. I remember what I was wearing, but I did. I took public transportation. I took two buses and a train to get to mm-hmm. Lane Tech. And it was it was like a really an overstimulation of the sense. Like,
it was
scary.
It's like the most on guard I've ever been in my life.
Yeah,
by far.
So many people, so many noises, and just even smells.
Yeah.
Going to the cafeteria, trying almost like you're going through the motions of like, I guess this is happening to me.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
It's just sort of it's happening to me. I don't know how to. I wish there were a way for me to tell Griffin to sort of check in mentally, you know, to sort
you know, it's
of
almost
like center
there's
yourself.
No way to prepare for it.
No, there is no way to prepare mm-hmm. for it. Yeah, it all felt like it
he's
was.
He's not listening right now, is he?
No, he's not. I know. I don't want to get him scared. He'll be fine. But
yeah,
I am a little bit nervous about the transportation thing. Steve and Griffin walked to the high school. We're about a mile away from our high school.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we had been very far. He had to drive about a half an hour in each direction for his last school. So,
oh, so that's great.
This is much closer, but what Steve's trying to figure out, like crossing the major streets,
mm-hmm.
you know, he's not a high school student yet. He's still a seventh
right.
grader. You know, like paying attention is significantly challenging for a 13-year-old boy,
mm-hmm.
you know, still looking in both directions for, I don't know. And he's always in his head. He's always, you know, thinking about other things
right.
and imagining other, you know, all these stories that he's got going on or, you know, or thinking, Griffin's thinking about politics. He was banned for the entire month of August from looking at the polling numbers.
Really?
Yep.
By you?
No,
what?
My husband banned him. He's like, stop. You cannot look at the polling numbers for all of August.
Neon vest?
Right.
Yeah, that's not going to get anything thrown at him, Esmeralda. That should go
yeah.
really well for him.
Yeah, like a penny with a target mm-hmm. on his vest.
That yeah, is. This is, and it's such a different experience from sending Declan off to school too, because we've had interesting first days. Declan, mm-hmm. who is significantly challenged intellectually and physically, we had one bad first day where, and fortunately, and if anyone has a child who is nonverbal, sometimes you just kind of you go through the motions of things and you forget little you know really important details. Fortunately, Steve had put a note in Declan's folder, you know, saying I'm Stephen, you know, and here's my information. Let me know if there's anything, you know, you need to know about Declan. I know that this is, you know, new for him and new for you.
Mm-hmm.
And he put his phone number in it. And we got a phone call saying, first of all, I want you to know that Declan's okay. And we were like, oh, okay. And then, Declan was taken to the wrong school.
What?
Yeah, Declan was taken to the wrong school, and he's nonverbal.
Right.
He's like going to a new place, and you know he was all happy to see. You know, he's like, all
yeah.
right, we're doing this now.
This
they didn't
right.
know who he was. They didn't know why he was there. Yeah, so it's been like first day of school can be very scary for especially parents who have children with disabilities who are going into a new school and you know it's not always a welcoming thing for all the parents to come
right.
in. They want, especially if you have kids that have already been there, they have a, you know, routine, they have a regiment that can't really be shaken. So you're never quite sure what you're supposed to, it's in, you know, Declan has been, such an amazing kid. There are moments where like, I forget like how much raising him is kind of like living in a haunted house though. Cause he's, his physical challenges and his health can go at any moment, like go one way or the other. So I never know what's going to happen next. So it makes me like always on edge. I like I just realized the other day, like, I don't think that parents who have children with disabilities are given enough room to, like, one, mourn the life that they thought they were going to have.
Right.
And for anyone who's finding out recently or has someone that they know, it's such a challenging time. And if you don't give yourself that space to sort of absorb it, I mean, it continues to be something that wears on you, and you have to check in, like we were talking earlier, checking in and going, okay, this is happening. But with Declan, every new school year, every new phase is a moment to go, okay, am I handling this? There was a study that said that mothers who have children with autism have PTSD at the same rate as veterans returning from war. And I find that that's when I read that, I thought, yeah, I mean, I have like these moments where I have rage or I have like, I can't vocalize it. I don't know where it's coming from.
Right.
And it's not like, I don't think that parents for the most part who have a child with a disability are like resentful of other people or are angry at them, but they're sometimes just grappling with all the things that aren't going quite the way they know how to manage, because there is no managing it. I mean, Declan will have to have, he'll have to have spinal surgery because his scoliosis is so significant that it's starting to affect his organs. But they have to wait because the spine doesn't finish growing until they're, you know, 13 years old. But then we don't know if he can actually, if he'll recover from it because, or the way, you know, in a healthy way, because he doesn't know to stay still. He doesn't know, like, don't move, don't.
Right.
So we're trying to, like, figure out, like, does that mean restraints? Does that mean sedation? Like, how long does that take?
Yeah, right. You can't do that for months, I would think. Right.
Yeah. So, like, it's like every step of the way. So school is a place that is a lot of respite for us if families are lucky enough to be in a school system where the services are strong for a child with a disability. And I urge you to be there for the people in your lives who have a child. You know, be patient because, you know, we may not always seem quite like we're there. But it's always the condescending stuff that I try to be patient with, you know, like, oh, but he's, you know, it's just that tone of voice.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, God only gives.
Right.
God only gives. God doesn't give you more than you can handle. I'm like, I'm maxed out.
Right.
I'm good. Stop giving. I'm right here. All right, more with our guest, James Vickery. When we come back, we have music. We have Music Monday tonight. Yeah. Rebecca is in the green room, and we'll chat some more when we come back on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. I have an event coming up on Friday night. Mark Roberts has a stage reading of his Lost Pilots, and Kathy Garver, and I have two guests that were supposed to be on at 11:30, and I completely, because it's Labor Day, my brain completely emptied altogether. So I apologize to my guests, Paul and Kathy, who are supposed to be on the show tonight. It's one of those things where, like, I think because it's a holiday, like, my brain goes, I'm not going to be able to function anymore right now.
This isn't a real day.
This isn't really happening. So I don't know if so that was one of those things that kind of fell through miscommunication. And it was entirely on me. So I'm not sure if Kathy's still going to be available. But we're doing a stage reading. Mark Roberts was the creator of Mike and Molly.
Yes.
As well as a writer for Two and a Half Men for many years. And he has an event coming up this Friday night called The Lost Pilots of Mark Roberts. And I'm going through my emails trying to find all the rest of the information.
He wrote and started that play that I found out about through being on the show.
Yes.
What was the name of it?
I know. I'm trying to figure that one out, too.
Oh, it was Country.
Yes, I know. I don't know.
It was so good. And he was amazing.
So the performance will be at 7 p.m. at the Annoyance Theater. And there are going to be several different pilots that we'll be reading, including, and by the way, Will Klinger is going to be involved, Mike Toomey will be there, Paul Lisnick, our very own. Although Paul, I don't know where Paul is. Paul was going to be on the show tonight too, and I think that he knows where we are. Ellen. Oh, Kathy, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I am so sorry. It's Labor Day, and I completely flaked on this. Tell us a little bit about yourself. I know that you're recovering from something. I don't know if you want to talk about that, but we love that you're on the air right now and gracious enough to take our call.
I am fine. It's Paul Lisnick who is recovering, and I'm soon to be his house guest.
I'm so confused.
I'm leaving from my home in San Francisco to come to Chicago tomorrow, as a matter of fact.
Oh, fantastic. I'm very excited about this event on Friday. Can I tell you a secret? I've never done a stage reading for a pilot before. What can people expect?
Very few people have actually done that, Patty. I personally have done a lot of radio shows, and a lot of radio readings, and a lot of stage readings, but never for Unsold Pilots. It's a first for me.
Yeah, and how do you know Mark Roberts? Because I just was lucky enough to meet him in Chicago.
I know him through my very good friend Paul Lisnick, and Paul is a lawyer, and he is a commentator, and his bio goes on and on. He does the interviews for Backstage, for Chicago. He's written about 5 books. He's very erudite.
Oh yes, I think he has a wing in the Broadcast Museum here in Chicago.
Yes, and as a matter of fact, there is a piece of memorabilia from my show Family Affair that sits in that museum in his wing, and a very interesting story about the pendant, and that is in the museum, the Broadcast Museum.
And can I ask if there are any of your perhaps props or anything from your show, from Family Affair?
Yes, that is what is in the museum. It's in the wing of Paul Lisnick's wing in the museum is a piece of my memorabilia from Family Affair, a pendant.
I know. And that was one of my favorite shows, by the way. I don't know how often people bother you about playing Sissy, but I don't mean to bother you. I was a big fan of the show. It was such a sweet show.
It's a great show. And as a matter of fact, I really do hate to say this, but it is the 60th anniversary a week from today.
What?
Wow. Very odd to me since I am 39 years old.
Exactly.
Yeah, I can't figure that out.
this big anniversary. I'm going to do MeTV, and we'll have a little celebration on Monday.
That's awesome.
That's fantastic. What a great memory, though, too, to have, and such a great career that you've had along the way. Now, for the reading that we're doing at the Annoyance Theater, I know that I just found out that we have a 3 o'clock run through, so it'll be a lot of people. Have you had the opportunity to meet anybody besides Paul?
Nope, he's the only one.
And I'm very nervous because I feel so badly that we left you hanging for so long. You were very nice. You're like, I'm giving you this amount of time, and you're absolutely right about that because I didn't mean to make you wait tonight. You're traveling from California to Chicago tomorrow. Are you a fan of our city? I mean, some people come here and they're like, oh, here I go to Chicago again. They're going to give me a hard time about.
I absolutely love Chicago. I've got great friends there. My dad was an architect, so I always like to take the architectural cruise down the river.
It's my favorite thing to
do in Chicago. It's just wonderful. I'm doing a book signing in Naperville on Thursday from 5 to 7, and might as well give that a plug.
Yes, of course.
My second book that I've written, and this one is Ex-Child Stars, Where Are They Now? But they'll also have my Surviving Sissy, My Family Affair of Life in Hollywood there. That's Thursday. Then I'm going to do this wonderful reading, and then I'm doing the Hollywood Chicago show over the weekend at the Hilton Rosemont memorabilia autograph show with Joyce DeWitt and Priscilla Barnes from, what's the name of their series?
Three's Joyce Company. DeWitt was Three's Company.
Three's Company. Thank you.
Yeah, of course.
It's still late for me. Well, I must say, since nobody was calling me, I went to bed and was half asleep.
That's fair.
Okay, well, I'm going to give them 15 minutes, and then I'm going to bed.
I agree completely.
I'm going to have it at
5:30. I've done that before, too, where I'm like, I'm just going to be under the blankets, and if this happens. No, you're absolutely right. So that you have a book signing, Ex-Child Stars, Where Are They Now? In Naperville. And then at the Hilton in Rosemont?
Over the weekend for Saturday and Sunday.
You have a busy weekend ahead of you.
10 to 5. Yes, I have. And the most fun, I think, is going to be the stage reading with all you wonderful actors and with Paul and with Mark. I have not met him, but I was reading his bio, and he certainly has gotten a lot of credits. So with Mike and Molly that he created and the writer for Two and a Half Men, and a comedian before that. So I think it's, I'm looking forward to it. And I love the scripts. I think that now the time is right for them. I can see why they didn't sell when they were first written.
Right.
They may have been a little edgy, a little bit, you know, too ahead of their times. But
that sounds
this
exciting.
Might breathe new life in them.
I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to meeting you as well. Everyone go to KathyGarver.com, which is your official website, correct?
Right.
And find out about her appearances this weekend. We will be at the Annoyance Theater on Friday. We appreciate your time and apologize for keeping you up and wish you some well rest tonight.
Oh, well, thank you very much. It was great talking with you.
Thank you so much. See you on Friday.
Okay.
Bye, Kathy.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I'm going to be at The Annoyance with Kathy Garver and a whole cast of amazing performers to read The Lost Pilots of Mark Roberts. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. It is Music Monday, and we are thrilled to welcome Rebecca Hasso in studio. Here she is playing The Sun, The Storm.
Come one lonely fall time story, little bird calls your name, pulls off your cellophane. Now loose, now your locks attached to ticking clocks that undo rubber bands, the ones bound, little hands. How quaint the rainy sea, low clouds in periphery, the cold breath of Santa Claus deflates him into what never was. The sun can't cheer you up. The storm, the great storm has come to take. Thank you.
Yeah, that's Rebecca Hasso with The Sun, The Storm. Come on over and sit down if you can. If you don't mind, I don't mean to make you put all your equipment down. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio. You're listening pretty late, and Rebecca just played a really wonderful song. I know that I didn't mean it to sort of be all up in your face with my camera. I was doing Facebook Live. I hope I didn't even ask you beforehand. Was that okay?
Sure.
I can get rid of it. Thank you so much for coming in tonight on a Labor Day.
That was awesome.
That was really beautiful music.
Great voice.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Have I got her microphone on? Because I don't have my headphones on. Bob, do I have the right one? Can you hear her in the headphones?
Mm-hmm. They can.
It's a lot going on in here. Let me turn this off, and that way we can coordinate better. Where are you from originally, Rebecca?
I'm from here. I'm from Chicago.
Where'd you grow up in Chicago?
I grew up on the south side in the Brighton Park area.
Oh.
Yeah, my parents still live there.
I'm feeling a little outnumbered now.
I know. I grew up on the southwest side.
All right. Where did you grow up?
Near Midway.
Oh, okay.
Garfield Ridge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where'd you go to high school?
I went to Curie.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't know why I made that noise. Woo. Last week we had a guest on, Rashada Dewan, who is doing hashtag karaoke for peace. Mm-hmm. And she's performing on corners and neighborhoods like Inglewood and the Austin Gresham neighborhoods and Roseland.
Cool.
And she had talked about graduating from Curie as well, that had a good performing arts program. Was that still the case when you were there?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they said it did. It was great.
That was their goal.
That was what I was studying there. And, you know, I remember when my older sister went to Whitney Young, and I was doing theater at Curie, and then, you know, we went to Whitney Young to see a show, and I was kind of like, oh, man.
Right.
You know.
Right. But Curie's kind of putting itself, it's fronting like a performing arts school. Well, Whitney Young fronts like everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Like they got everything going on.
I don't want to put Curie down because it was actually a great school and a great experience, but I, you know.
Which programs do you think were best for you at Curie? Because I know she was talking about like the choir, and then she ended up in the performing arts.
Yeah, you know,
like, acting.
Yeah, I did chorus and drama. Those were the main, you know, things. Because I don't know if they still do it, but we had to pick a major.
Yes, that's what
really?
She was saying as well. Yeah,
we picked a major. And so my major, I remember just not knowing what to pick, but thinking I liked theater all of a sudden. Like, it came to me one day, you know, when I was at orientation or whatever. It wasn't like something I thought, oh, I'm going to be an actress. And since I have not, you know, continued down that path, so... But, I picked drama, and then you had to do chorus if you were doing drama, so.
We were just talking about that first day of school, because at Lang Tech, we had to pick a major as well.
Really?
Actually. Really?
Yeah. We had to do, like, technical or, what your sort of focus was going to be. And that's hard at 14.
It is.
Well, and I wasn't prepared. I remember just, like, going in there, and they're like, okay, what's your major going to be?
Yeah.
And I didn't know what.
How about
my
a little more guidance
were?
Here,
right.
People?
Mine
the adult status.
Not getting shoved on the bus. Like,
How far away from home was Curie? Was that a hike for you?
Not really. It was about a mile and a half.
Oh, it's not too bad.
Maybe less than a mile and a half.
Yeah, that'd be rough having a sibling who went to another school. The rivalry's tough.
Yeah. It was, I wanted to go to Whitney Young, but I didn't have like the test scores at the time. So I ended up at Curie, but I was happy. I liked Curie.
I've heard great things about Curie. Their softball team wasn't great. I will say that.
Oh, really?
I was always happy to play Curie. I'm like, all right, good. We got Curie on the roster. All right, let's go take care of that. And Simons. I don't want to just, you know, be a little Curie. I'll throw them all under the bus. Juarez, not good either.
I know. I don't know if it's still the case, but back then, I know that we were second to Lane Tech in the size, like population.
Yeah, it's a big school. Do you find, and so I was talking about being able to navigate the busy, crowded hallways. Do you find that you still carry that skill with you in life?
I'm pretty sure that the only thing is, because I don't know, you know, about other schools, but there were two buildings, mm-hmm. and you had this short in between periods, and I always every year I know I had like one class in the B building on the second floor, and I had to go to the third floor of the A building, and I never made it. I was always late.
Never,
for that class, chemistry or whatever it would be. So
I wrote a piece in the newspaper one year about how, you know, people could run a mile in 4 minutes, but we're not in a crowded hallway,
right.
You know, not with like stopping at your locker or trying to get
you can't stop at your locker. There's no time.
No, especially if your locker like mine was off in a wing. We're kind of like this weird demonic H shape. It doesn't really make any sense with like wings at one end and four floors in some places, but three floors in others. So not every stairwell goes to the fourth floor.
Right.
Very confusing building. Yeah, I'm still feeling traumatized by the size of my school and passing period. Yeah, if you had that one class, you knew you're never. How did the teacher react to you never being on time?
You know, it was funny because I remember that I had art or course or something before chemistry this one year, and my chemistry teacher, like, was mad. He was just he didn't cut me any slack. And then I don't remember his name or anything, but I remember that he had a brother who was like a performing arts guy or something, like a successful musician. And he sort of expressed disdain for this, like, for the arts, you know. And I don't know how much it might have been tongue in cheek, and I just didn't have a sense of sarcasm. Well,
especially when we're that age, I can't hear it through the hormones.
Yeah, exactly.
You're hearing the soft edges of humor.
I'm just tuning in every few seconds.
Yeah, yeah. But I remember him just being like kind of bitter about it. I felt kind of awkward. But
there was something I just read that I'll have to look it up, but there's some national brouhaha over a company that was saying that science is more important than arts.
Literally just saw that. Yeah,
yeah. And I think, and that's not fair to a teenager who's just trying to discover themselves.
Yeah.
I on the other hand, had a drafting teacher, because we did drafting at Lane Tech, who asked me when I was 15 years old if I was, since I was a softball player, was I gay? And I was, so you guys had different conversations. I had a trig teacher. I yawned in class one night, and he said if I was tired from walking the streets at night. I had different experiences than everybody else. Yeah, I don't know what the obsession was in my high school with, like, sort of sexual orientation and apparently being a woman of the night. It's sort of Mr. Nakimura. I think Nishimura. I will throw people under the bus for the things that they do.
It's deserved.
And Mr. Berlanga, who was my drafting teacher, that asked me if I was gay. That's not okay at 15, because he played softball.
Right.
Did you even, like, that wasn't even a conversation when we were in high school. Was that that wasn't even a thing.
I don't think so.
It just seems like a lot of pressure from a teacher.
I went to an all-boys Catholic high school, and it was, you know, it's talked about in a different way, I guess.
In a derogatory way.
It was, definitely, yeah.
That I remember. I remember the boys giving each other a hard time.
Mm-hmm. I do think that, like, when I was in high school, people were less sensitive in general. I don't know if they are
more
sensitive now, but
overall?
Yeah, it seems like there's this culture of, like, acceptance and tolerance that we're at least trying to promote that we didn't have when I was in high school.
Right. And when I was in high school, I guess it must have been like right before the PC thing hit, like the people would worry about the things that they said when I had teachers that would kind of talk this way. It's weird, the conversations that stick in your head I remember one teacher who would get involved in everyone's gossip. That was bizarre.
That's
really
weird.
Yeah, it was very, like, he always knew everyone's gossip, who was dating who was having, you know, a kind of a fight, the cliques, all that stuff. Yeah.
I think, that's like, weird. Junior year, we had, like, a marriage class. It was or something
you
like
had a marriage class?
Relationship class. And it was taught by the football coach. And who was married and stuff.
So bizarre.
But no background in it or whatever. He was just kind of winging it, I could tell. And one of the days he went through a very descriptive playback of his bachelor party with, it was like the craziest, like wild.
Oh, dear. See, this is what I'm saying. Crossing the line as a teacher.
Right.
Like, that's crossing the line.
That was definitely crossing the line. Yeah.
He
would also say, we were talking about some health topics. He would say vaginal.
Oh,
and stuff
weird.
Instead of, you know, like he mispronounced words.
Oh, no. But
oh, so he wasn't using it as an adjective.
No.
He was just pronouncing it incorrectly.
He's pronouncing it wrong.
That's
added
weird.
Things.
Oh, gosh. But you mentioned that there was a marriage class. Is that because was there like a high incidence of like, were there a lot of pregnancies in your school?
I think it had something to do with like every year there was a vaguely, at least religious type, you know, so that was kind of the
You went to a Catholic school?
St. Lawrence.
Oh, yeah, then yeah, I could see you having a marriage class. That makes more sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There has to be a balance your checkbook class. That's all I think
right?
that's, you know, and
change
the 0.3%, you know, for 18 months mean afterwards, it's going to be 26.99. That, like, you make your minimum payment now, that's going to work out later.
That's the one.
You have that class. I know.
Yeah.
It's just because
I know about bachelor parties.
All right. More after this on 720 WGN.
The rain that's trickling. trickling down, makes everything brown and soaked for a while. The wet leaves under my feet, the death smelling sweet from the leaf pile. I'd say it's lovely. Above, all spindled and such, the desolate road. The fog obscuring my view, all colors subdued, all dead and alone. I'd say, it's lovely.
That's Rebecca Hasso with It's Lovely. We're going to go to the news and catch up with our with Rebecca and some guests that we also have in the green room. And I think we might hear from Paul, because Paul Lesnick tried calling me during that. And I was like, I'm doing Facebook Live. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining us on the line is Paul Lesnick, who, thank you so much for being so cool tonight.
Oh, my pleasure.
It's Labor Day, sir, and we are doing an event this Friday night at the Annoyance Theater, The Lost Pilots of Mark Roberts. And have you done a live stage reading of this kind of magnitude?
The only thing I did years ago, back in college days, to be honest with you, we did a live reading, actually lip-syncing of Brady Bunch scripts. Now, I'm not sure how that's going to compare, because the humor of Mark Roberts and the humor of those Brady Bunch scripts, very, very similar, I would expect.
Oh, I think you're right. This is, by the way, I'm reading your bio on the Lost Pilots of Mark Roberts page.
Gotcha. By the way, I was being facetious. Mark Roberts' humor, of course, nothing like Brady Bunch's.
No.
You might well imagine. People are really in for a great time.
Well, the thing is, he has a wide range of, and Brady Bunch aside, you know, they can have their moments of social commentary, but Mark does a great job of getting to the nitty gritty of relationships, is the way I would describe it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And just, you know, there's almost a, as I've read through the scripts, we're doing three different shows, all very, very different. And there's almost, there's sometimes a bittersweetness to them, right?
Yes.
Where you just get to sort of what's really underneath these relationships and almost a sadness about them. But I've known Mark Roberts for many, many, many years. You know, there's a lot of him underneath this,
right.
And a lot of his background.
And again, this is going to be Friday, September 9th at the Annoyance Theater. The bar opens at 6. The performances, the readings are starting at 7 o'clock. And everyone can go to theannoyance.com for ticket information. And how did, so when he asked you to do this reading, what was your first thought about reading a lost pilot of Mark Roberts?
Well, let me take a little bit of just a word of history back. Mark was just in town doing one of his new plays called New Country, which was fantastic. Mark and I used to work together at the University of Illinois back in the, not the university, but at the Station Theater, which was in Urbana, Illinois.
Really?
Yeah. And I would perform. He was, he would also perform, but where we worked together was as co-MCs, can you picture it, of like the annual theater dinner kind of a thing. And of course, you know, I can be all right in terms of humor, but Mark is crazy. And so working with him was just a roller coaster ride. And I thought, this guy's either completely lunatic or this guy's going somewhere.
Right.
It turns out actually both may be true.
Right.
Because he certainly went somewhere. But anyway, and so when he was doing New Country, which is a great show, we got in touch, and he asked if I would interview him one night after the show, something they would tape. I think it's available online somewhere. And it's a lot of his history and his work with Chuck Lorre, and who he has a very clearly interesting relationship with, of Two and a Half Men fame and Big Bang Theory and all that. So we talked about that. And then recently, a few months ago, he contacted me and said, you know, I'm thinking of presenting these unaired pilots, and would you like to be a part of it? And I thought, well, what a treat. What fun is that going to be? And that's kind of where it started for me.
And there's a lot of people involved in this, by the way, everyone. I want you to know, not only is Paul Lisnick and I, we were both going to be there on Friday. You also have Tim Kazurinsky, Mike Toomey. We talked to Kathy earlier, who played Sissy on
Kathy Garver she's a close friend of mine. She actually, when she comes in town, she stays here. So I brought this up with her when this first came up. I said, you know, Kathy's coming in town to Mark. Would you be interested? He says, my God, that would be great. So I called her and she said, I would love to do it. She's always in town to either do a movie or do one of the Hollywood shows or something.
Right.
And that's why she's coming in. So yeah, this kind of fit into the schedule. And I read her part too. She plays Sissy's no longer Sissy. She's no longer the teenager from Family Affair. She's playing the mom now. And it's a great role.
Yeah, very cool. And now, how would you describe your role?
Well, I have different roles in different shows. Kathy's in one. I'm actually in all three scripts. But, you know, the way Mark is, well, I can't say the way he's done it for everybody, I don't know. But you sort of have a bigger part in one and maybe a smaller part in another. So in one, that's about a prison. I simply play an inmate that has some fairly dirty lines throughout the show. in another one, it involves sort of this barber, and I have a bit of a larger role where I play somebody that works at a greeting card company who seems to be kind of a loser character. So very different roles in each of the different scripts. And what I had said to Mark when we talked, because, of course, I do a nightly show over at CLTV, which is called Politics Tonight, working as the political analyst on WGN-TV.
And nothing going on this season. It's very quiet, isn't it?
There's, like, no politics going on.
Yeah.
Like, who's even paying attention?
I know.
You know, I mean, is there a presidential election? I don't know.
I don't know.
So it's so crazy. So actually that day, the news director is allowing me to pre-tape my show so I can pre-tape it for that night a couple of hours earlier so that we can all get together and rehearse and be crazy.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a lot of fun and so many great people. Everyone, you can also follow this on Facebook. There's the Lost Pilots of Mark Roberts on Facebook as well as on Twitter. And you can take a look at the cast and all the different, I think it's a unique opportunity for people to see what the process is like to write a pilot, what it's like to kind of put it up on its feet, and in this, you know, sort of eclectic collection of entertainers, too.
Very much so. And he did assemble, as you started to mention, Kazurinsky and Mike Toomey, by the way, from the morning show, WGN Morning Show, is going to join us. I don't know if the audience is going to have fun, but we're going to have a great time.
I know. And we want everyone to have a great time. You can go to the Annoyance theannoyance.com for all the tickets. Yeah, there's a nice long introduction as to what this is going to be on the Facebook page, and you can go to the when you go to theannoyance.com, there's also some information there as far as the.
And we probably, I should probably mention, I don't know if we should say it, but I mean, my understanding is it's kind of selling really quickly. So the
yes.
truth is, I'm not really pushing people, but I mean this: if somebody says, "Oh, I really would like to go and do that," you probably really ought to act fast because Mark interacted with me tonight a little bit on texting and said, "Boy, they're really going fast." So
well, that's great. Yeah, I think we're going to have, I believe Will Klinger will also be
yes.
on the show this week to talk about his...
when he's not finding Wild Chicago out, right?
Isn't he finding like Wild America next?
Yeah.
I think he's taking it on the road.
And you know what I don't know? I actually don't know whether Mark is performing in these. Do you know?
I don't know. His picture...
He may just be... I don't know. He might be, but he might just be introducing. Some of this is kind of secret, you know? Who knows what Mark's going to do? But Mark is so fun, so crazy. And by the way, for folks who... Obviously, he'll be there being part of this, and the Annoyance Theater is such a sort of a intimate environment that mm-hmm. obviously people will have a chance to meet him. And to talk to the guy who... I mean, again... Here's this guy I kind of, you know, was in school with years ago. He created Mike and Molly. He writes 2 1/2 Men, writes The Big Bang Theory. You can go on and on with the classic shows, all of which are fairly naughty, that he's involved with. And, of course, all the scripts we're going to perform, also fairly naughty.
Well, there you go. It's going to be at 851 West Belmont Avenue, and that's right here in Chicago. Also, the Annoyance Theater phone number is 773-697-9693. And, yeah, I'm very excited to share the stage with you on Friday.
I'm looking forward to seeing you, Patty. This will be a blast. The first time we're actually performing. We've done radio together. You've had me as a guest before. But the first time we get to perform on stage together.
It'll be very fun. Plus, I hear Mark is feeding us. So that's really why I'm showing up.
This is a rumor. Although, you know, I have to tell you, I had surgery Friday. So I'm on wonderful drugs. Wonderful drugs. And so I don't know if I'm going to be able to. I don't think we're going to drink anyway. I don't think Mark would be offer alcohol. I don't think that's part of it. But I'm trying to get off the medications by Friday so that I can... have a good time with you.
I love how you're trying to stress that. Who knows? Maybe the medications are a fun way to do the show as well.
You know, there are people who tell me that medications plus alcohol, you know, but no, I don't think so.
Let's not get into dangerous territory there.
Not going there.
Well,
not going to do it.
I hope you're having a speedy recovery.
Thank you. I'm working on it.
Very good. I don't want to get into any details. I don't know if you're sharing that, but you know, I think it's better that it's a mystery. What did Paul have done?
Yeah, let's just say Paul had done is not serious. Everything's okay, but Paul's in some pain.
Oh, well, get some rest, and thank you so much for
lifting.
For joining
it's a lifting thing. Do not lift things.
Just that glass of water to take the pain meds.
Exactly.
Take care of it that way. Well, I look forward to seeing you on Friday, and thank
Me
you
too,
for
it's going
to
be fun.
It'll be very fun. And thank you for staying up pretty late.
Oh, always. Anytime for you.
I appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon. I'll see you on Friday.
See you Friday.
Thanks. Again, go to theannoyance.com for ticket information and come see us perform The Lost Pilots of Mark Roberts at the Annoyance Theater. More after this on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio. You're listening pretty late. Joining me is James Vickery. He is performing with me at Zany's on Wells. And that's actually why I can't do the first performance of our next guest show. We also, by the way, we have Rebecca Hasso, who's in studio for Music Monday. She'll be performing more music when we come back. I didn't want to leave you hanging on the mic, but I love having you in the studio.
Thanks.
It's just so much fun to have new people. We have also with us Tim Grimes, who is going to be relaunching mm-hmm. Laughing Liberally
That's
at
right.
the Elbow Room starting this Wednesday night at 8 p.m. And we also have Bob Rock. How are you doing?
Hello.
How are you doing? I like that hat, by the way.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having us.
I feel like I should have like a light, like the bat signal ready to go for you. Laughing Liberally, people are going to be like, oh, okay. Yeah, right?
All conservatives and Republicans are invited to. They may not like the show, but they are very well, they're invited.
Well, when there's, you know, the thing is that like humor is humor, right?
Yeah,
and I think that the important thing about doing comedy is, look, like Lewis Black does a great job of sort of straddling all of it, making fun of everybody,
definitely.
Right? But there, you know, there's something that needs to happen this season to just kind of, especially this political season, to, you know, and not just cast a light on it, but to have comedic relief.
Yeah. But we have this kind of weird time where we decided to come back after being gone for 3 years because, you know, Barack was reelected. We thought, our job is done. We can go away now and not do the show anymore.
Well, what is your job? How would you define that?
I feel like, you know, that we're doing, you know, political comedy and this Friday show kind of a format. And we bring in jugglers and stand-ups and musicians and everything. But then we would do sketches that were mostly political. And, you know, so after we did this for 6 years, we kind of, you know, we're getting a little bit burnout. And after Barack got reelected, we're like, okay, we're good now. We can leave the country back to, it's all put together again.
Everything's
and then,
fixed.
Yeah. And then Trump happened. So now we're like, okay, we're back. We got to do something. We got 3 months before, you know, they're like.
Well, can we talk a little bit about how passionate you were about Bernie Sanders?
Oh.
And so my guess is you have enough about both.
So I'm wearing a Bernie shirt right now.
About Bernie and where that, how that influences this political season.
Yeah, it's tough because I am still really sad that Bernie, of course, isn't going to be our president. And it's weird because when we do these shows, they're very it's progressive, you know, and liberal, whatever, you know, term you want to put on that. But we want to support, you know, certainly Hillary and this. But, you know, she has things that we can make fun of, too. But, you know, at this point right now, we're kind of putting ourselves into, like, let's just jump on the bash Trump train, I guess. And I mean, but it's weird though for comedians on this. Like, I'm sure you agree, Bob, right? Like, it's, he's like, everything he says is an Onion headline. So
it's hard to make fun of somebody who does a pretty great job of just saying things that are so ridiculous,
yeah.
All on his own.
Mm-hmm. And are you guys focusing on Down the Ticket as well, what that looks like? I mean, because that's another strange thing that's happening right now. There are 4 to 5 seats that could be up in the air that if Democrats win those,
sure,
could change the entire landscape.
I think that on this show particularly, what we're doing, we're definitely covering more like
the presidential
election.
Yeah.
But I think we want to get back to doing more local, especially after, you know, the next few shows after we get over the presidential season, you know, go back into more local politics. But still, yeah, like right now, it's so hard. Like, it's just, yeah, Trump and Hillary just take the whole air out of the whole conversation for anything else to come in, you know?
Right. And I was telling you off the air that I'm not, I don't bring up the stories, but what is, you know, when this first started last year, when Donald Trump announces his run for the presidency, mm-hmm, what did you think? What was the first thing? Do you remember what ran through your mind?
I mean, first off, I know he had already kind of tried to do this before. I think it was like the Reform Party in 2000, right? But then he never really quite put his foot in. It was like putting a toe in. But after it happened, you realize it wasn't going away. After the first couple of weeks, it was like, okay, he's just doing this for his usual publicity. He just wants to get another season of Apprentice, and this is just to be a little circus sideshow for the first few weeks. And then he'll go away after Iowa or something, and then it just never went away.
What did you think, Bob, when he announced?
Okay, so I knew then that we were going to have to get back together and start doing stuff again. So I just like...
Oh, we did.
Like, oh,
immediate
go.
Thought.
I pictured like the beginning of the Mighty Ducks movies where all the different Mighty Ducks are like doing different things around the neighborhood. Like one's at a deli,
exactly,
and the other one's like working at a grocery store. And we're all just like, of course, nothing with that much pride.
Yeah,
I think,
exactly.
Like, you would be on the couch like eating Doritos,
yeah, sure,
and then I would be a little bit further down that couch, and then, like, you know, Matt and James would be just as far away from us as possible. But yeah, I, as a Mexican dude, you know, like it just scares me, the idea of getting deported to Mexico. I'd have to learn Spanish.
What generation?
Sure.
I know, me too. What generation are you?
Second.
Second. So, I mean, because I'm first generation,
sure,
and I know when he said in his speech, and not that I'm like, I'm not throwing that down, like,
yeah, sure,
but I'm also like second generation Irish, I think. I don't know, somewhere. My great grandmother's from Ireland, so does that make me second?
Great-grandmother.
My grandmother was first generation. My dad was, I'm third generation.
Third.
But when he was in Mexico, did you hear him say that the first generation, second generation, they're all good? They're good Mexicans.
They're good Mexicans.
Yeah, so we're good. We're just fine.
I'm not that good.
Okay.
I'd say you're, you know, mediocre.
I'm average to middling.
Average Mexican.
This guy rudely asked for my seat on the bus the other day, but I was surrounded by the reserved for people with disability seats.
Right.
There's always the one in the middle that's not. marked for that.
Right.
But so we get one seat in the front. And he's like, give me your seat. And I'm like, no, that's not going to happen. And he kind of, you know, motioned down to the fact that he had a cane. And I was like, dude, you have to learn better social skills
to get the, gonna, to like, get the handicap seat.
The bus. And then right after that, we picked up a second dude, also had a cane. And I gave my seat right up.
There you go.
Because he wasn't belligerent about it.
Right. I'm not a bad person. I'm just petty.
Right. But it has nothing to do with you being Mexican.
I think that's growing up in the Midwest. I think that's my Chicagoan. It's like, I'm not going to give up my seat up to you.
Right.
I'm going to put on a Cubs hat and eat a hot dog right now instead.
Not only am I not going to give it up for you, but the next guy that comes along, he's going to get the seat.
He's going to get it.
Yeah.
I don't care how near death you are. Yeah.
Yeah. That is a Chicago trait. Tim, are you from Chicago originally?
No, I'm actually from Bloomington, Illinois.
All right.
The Twin Cities there. And then I grew up in Iroquois County around Gilman. It's like maybe a graduating class, like 40 in my high school. So I
the whole high
straight
school?
From the corn. No, the graduating class. So like 200 maybe in the high school.
All right, that's
so
small though.
I came from the corn and somehow ended up in Chicago. They went to New York and L.A. and back here because Chicago rules.
Yeah, New York and L.A. How about you, Bob? Where'd you grow up?
I grew up right here. I went to high school in Skokie.
Okay.
But I lived in Chicago.
They didn't let you go to high school in the city?
Didn't let,
they're like,
no way.
This 4 years you're going to spend in Skokie.
I was super lucky to be able to do it. To be able to go to school. The school we went to was really nice. And
I like how you just want to say it.
I went to Niles North. I'm very happy to say.
Is Niles North the one by the Old Orchard?
Yep. Right across the street.
I always
blew my mind.
I would not have been able to keep any money in high school. Like,
luckily I didn't have any. So that was cool. That worked out well for all of us. I had two brothers and my mom, and she worked at the restaurant in the Doubletree, and we just had like an apartment with like basically two bedrooms. So she had her own, and then we shared. And like all these kids that like grew up in like really big houses and houses in general were always like really weirded out that we all lived in one room and that we didn't have a car and then we didn't have a phone, which is kind of like a big deal when you're a teenager because everybody's just talking on the phone. This is pre-smartphones, ladies and gentlemen.
Right. Mm.
So it was kind of a culture shock on both sides because I think there wasn't a lot of I think there's a little bit more like economic diversity now.
Right.
But back then it was like
you were the one.
Super
it was
lucky.
You.
Yeah. Yeah, seriously, like there was probably a handful of Latino kids in our class, and that was including my little brother.
Hmm. Right. Well, that's the thing is that I think that that's what it takes is for people to sort of be around each other. And so when we talk about laughing liberally and people are like, oh, I that doesn't agree with my politics. Mm-hmm. Well, go see. We should go to the conservative shows. I don't know what conservative comedy shows
that's
there are.
The thing.
They don't really have any.
They don't have
I think
much.
About this all the time.
We thought about infiltrating.
Republicans, hire us. We'll write you a great, mm-hmm. funny show.
Yeah, come on.
We'll make it
more.
Funny.
But I was going to say, this Laughing Liberally is actually a national organization, but it's a part of an umbrella called Living Liberally. And so basically there's little, you know, all over the states and cities, there's all over. But they have Drinking Liberally, that people will go to bars and do this, but also the Laughing Liberally is in a few other cities. But we found out once we were doing Drinking Liberally, there was some sort of drinking conservatively going on in the city during the last election, and we wanted to go in and infiltrate it.
It sounds less fun. Drinking conservatively
right.
seems like
it's not near as fun.
Half
right?
a glass of wine and...
Drinking moderately Republican.
Sorry, there are conservatives' heads here exploding right now. What I mean is, like, the description sounds as though it wouldn't be.
That's
fun. You're refraining.
I've been in that room, but I was like a caterer.
Okay.
That's how close.
That's every Wednesday night. The first Wednesday of every month at the Elbow Room. It's going to be we're going to be Laughing Liberally, hosted by the accountants of Homeland Security.
That's right.
We've got Tim Grimes, Bob Rock. Is it Rock?
Yeah.
I just want to make sure. Roke. That's Rock. I don't know why I panicked.
You've seen my sticker around the city and thought to yourself, who cares? Which is
I've had people yell that at my comedy.
Ooh.
That'll ring in your head for years, actually. It's been since 1999. That's how long. Who cares? Okay, good. Time to change direction. We have on the show will also be James Bespalek.
James Bespalek Davis.
Davis. Hyphen Davis. Oh, good for him for keeping the hyphen.
Yes.
Do we know why he has a hyphen? Was it his mom, or did he marry someone into her name?
His wife, which is the lovely Chris Bespalek. They decided to combine.
Yeah. Oh. I told my husband I would take his name if he took my name. Mm-hmm. That did not happen. Yeah. Matthew Filipowicz.
Yes, he's back from Boston. He has his own podcast show, Matthew Filipowicz. Look him up.
He's the most famous one of us.
He actually has a name out there and has been around the block.
Kristen Ryan, Audrey Jonas, mm-hmm. Sarah Manning. We have a juggler, Brad French.
Yes, he's done our show many times. He's like Steve Martin, but juggles, you know. He's a very funny guy.
Do me a favor. Ask him if he goes running and juggling. No, because there was a guy. There was a guy in Irving Park Road in the Lakeview neighborhood or near Lincoln Square, actually, who was running and juggling. And I didn't get my phone out fast enough to get a picture of him.
He's got whiter hair.
He's a little bit older.
Yeah.
Ask him if he runs and juggles.
You would if you were an audience member taking that in. You would have to like run yourself as well to keep up with the.
Yeah. It's confusing. He was running and juggling. Like me and the guy in the car next to the guy in the car next to me. We were like. Are we seeing this? We're miming juggling. It was all very confusing. More with our guests, Laughing Liberally. When we come back, we have Bob Rock and Tim Grimes. More music from Rebecca Hasso. And Rebecca, do you have any live performances coming up? I don't want to plug just us.
Sure. Yeah, I do. I'm actually playing at Old Town School on September 10th.
Excellent.
I think it's sold out, actually. I'm opening for Dave and Phil Alvin, who have quite a following, apparently, because I know those people aren't coming to see me.
They would if there were any tickets left. They would be coming to see you. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio with some really wonderful guests, James Vickery, Bob Rock, and Tim Grimes, and more with my guests. So when we come back after some wonderful music from our guest, Rebecca Hasso, who is here for Music Monday. She'll be performing at the Old Town School of Music on September 10th. I don't know if there are any tickets left. You might want to check it out. But you can hear her right now playing Who Is There But Us.
Tight while you have me near. Tomorrow comes, I'll disappear. In the gloom of the darkened night, I don't have the heart to fight. Wickedness has conspired to separate me from you. So I tread the snowy path. In the end, I've gone at last. Thank you.
Yeah. That's Rebecca Hasso with Who Is There But Us. She'll be performing at the Old Town School of Music September 10th. Go find out if they have any tickets left. I'm guessing, you know what, let's make that standing room only. Can I go ahead and can I push the limits of their fire code over there at the Old Town School of Music? We have in studio with us comedian James Vickery, who's appearing at the Zanies on Wells through Sunday. Yep. So you've got nine shows.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Nine. I know. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to throw that at you. We, Zanies in Chicago is one of the last clubs in the country to do three shows on Saturday nights. I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't. I remember when they stopped doing it in Nashville, I was so happy.
That 11:15, that last one's always interesting.
The Improv on Wells back in the day did three shows, and they would do a midnight show. And that place, I mean, it was The Walking Dead by 2 in the morning. Yeah. It was, I mean, Chicago's just not that town. I mean, we're just not. We're still Chicago. We're in the Midwest. I don't even know if they do that in Los Angeles. Did you do comedy in L.A. or New York?
No. Well, in L.A., I was just there for a few months shopping a script around. But in New York, I was doing a sketch group called OCYC there for about 4 years.
OCYC?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And should we know what OCYC means?
We used to joke that when someone asked that, like, well, what do you stand for? You know, and that took a while for people to, we even had contests like guess the best wrong answer. But I'll say this on the air, Matthew Phil Povich has actually made it's probably gonna get angry at me, but it just
he's revealing the secret.
It just means of course you can't, because that was
of course you can't,
because he had a lot of people early on in the shows that wouldn't actually commit to doing a rehearsal or actually be able to do a show. They'd be like, oh yeah, I can't make a Thursday. Yeah,
of course you can't. Yeah. Oh man. Well, that is okay. So that's the hard thing about doing sketch. You've worked with a comedy partner before, right?
A little bit. Mm-hmm.
Right? And,
yeah.
And Rebecca, have you been a solo performer most of the time, or have you?
I had a band for a little while there, but I think even throughout that I did a solo thing too.
Right. There's something about standing on stage alone, being responsible for everything mm-hmm. that happens next, that is, I just do better with that. Having a group of people.
I like that too.
And I just, one, now that you mentioned rehearsals, I hadn't even thought of that part, mm-hmm. right? Of getting everybody together and dealing with schedules. And then you have personalities on top of that. Bob, do you primarily do sketch or stand up?
I do more stand up than sketch. But sketch is nice because, you know, riding coattails and just like putting all the work on you.
Exactly. Here, get out on your underwear again.
I'm
all
just
right.
The comic relief and, you know, just one quick line.
Yep.
Ay, Dios mío.
I think probably the problem that happens with solo performers is writing in a vacuum, though. Do you have someone that you can collaborate with when you're writing the lyrics or music?
Sort of.
Yeah.
Not really. I usually just write the songs, and then I do have a friend who sometimes I work with to build them up a little bit.
Right. See, because it's hard to see with sketch, because you are, like you mentioned, you're like throwing ideas and, you know, you've got, it gets very, there's a lot of energy, mm-hmm. right? So you can kind of feed off of each other. But for, and you also see what somebody else doesn't see, right? And mm-hmm. you give that, and it can be vulnerable to sort of, if you're sharing your lyrics with somebody, to sort of go, what do you think?
Yeah.
That's
very true.
I found the biggest difference is like, I've hardly done any sort of stand up, but I find that when you're up there alone and you bomb as a stand up, that's got to be the most excruciating thing, because when you're bombing as a sketch group, it's just, you know, you bomb beautifully together. And
you could laugh about it later.
Laugh about it. It's a camaraderie mm-hmm. thing, and it's so much better.
As a stand up, just everyone avoids you after.
Oh. I know. It is the weirdest thing.
Or they say nice set, and then you're like, oh, that's the worst thing to hear, because you know it was not a nice set.
Nice set, yeah. I always find it interesting when there's a stand up comic that has no gauge of how badly that just went.
Right.
Have you ever seen the
air? They come off like, you didn't just witness that?
Did you not feel or taste the hatred coming, oozing from the audience? Their complete disdain of you, waiting for you to be done? Say, actually yelling out, aren't you done yet? Like, no, there's some people that I kind of love that denial.
Yeah,
you know, I kind of love that living in your own little world. That's sort of like unaware. I think somebody said that the world is made for people who are completely unaware. Rebecca's like, I don't know what that's like. I don't either. I'm constantly like, what we do as comics sometimes is we'll notice that one person that's not laughing.
Yes.
You could have a whole room.
Oh yeah,
just rolling in the aisles, laughing hard. And do you have that as a musician?
Totally. Yeah, and I feel like I was just thinking too about my friend who I work with on music with and other people. I always feel like I need feedback, and sometimes I'll present a song and I'll just be like, they'll just give me a gentle nod, and it's like, so what do you think? And then they're like, yeah, that was nice.
Or, that was nice.
You know, something kind of, you read too much into it.
Oh, no doubt about it.
Oh, man, you hated it. Oh, my goodness, I got to cry.
You know, it's the word, for me, the trigger word when someone after a show says, congratulations.
Congratulations?
Like, yeah, you know, if you do something like, and like, hey, congratulations for being up there. Like,
I have gotten that.
Congratulations.
What do you think I've overcome?
Right, exactly.
Wait to set your alarm clock for 7 o'clock at night.
Yeah. Way to be up there, and you didn't fall over or anything.
Let's talk in a few moments. Let's talk a little bit more about Laughing Liberally, which is the first Wednesday of every month at the Elbow Room. Tickets are only $5. $5 to just go hang out with these guys. See what they have to say about what's going on in our world right now. They're hosted by the accountants of Homeland Security. I got to find out more about you guys when we come back. Rebecca Hasso is going to be at the Old Town School of Music on September 10th. You're allowed to stay as long as you want. I'm not making you leave. Your husband Oscar is hanging out in the green room. If he's done, let us know. And James Vickery is performing at Zany's with me all week, or I'm performing with him all week. We'll figure it out when we come back. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. We have Music Monday with us tonight with Rebecca Hasso, and she's performing at the Old Town School of Music. Is there a website we should send people, or Twitter? Where would you like to send people to find out more about the Rebecca Hasso?
My website, which is RebeccaHasso.com, and Hasso is actually spelled J-A-S-S-O.
There you go. Go to her website. That works out very well. Can people purchase some of your music there too?
Yeah, I actually just made an EP, my first solo EP. I recorded it, and I don't know. I'm ecstatic about
it. That's
great. I made it kind of quickly for this Old Town show because of how many people are coming to it.
And sell some merch.
Exactly.
Sell
some really
merch.
I don't have anything. And I'm like, man, I'm going to try to get rich at this show if people will only be generous and buy my little EP.
Buy her EP if you're going to that show, and maybe there's tickets left.
You
don't
can
know.
Also buy it on my website, either digitally or a physical CD as well.
I still buy physical CDs. Do you still buy CDs, Tim?
Once in a while. Yeah. I love the
packaging, having all the artwork. Do you still buy CDs, Tim?
I do. I actually do a lot at Reckless because you can get some really good CDs for like $1 there. You know, it's like,
they still sound better to me in the car, too.
Yeah,
than
that's
connecting
where I listen to most in my car. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Bob?
I don't have a CD player anywhere.
Yeah.
So I don't really...
still cassette
tapes? Vinyl.
That's
correct. Yeah. I think there are some. They're making 8-track players again for people.
You can
fit your car with an 8-track player.
No.
I know. I only remember growing up with 2 8-tracks, and it was one was a Willie Nelson album, and the other was a Bing Crosby, which I think makes sense. I think that kind of is, and it's just so hard. I mean, they were so big.
I never used an 8-track.
Did you ever see one? It was like it would stick out. So instead of like popping it in and then closing the door on the, or whatever, however, or sliding it, it disappeared.
They're kind of like video game cartridges.
That's what I picture.
Yeah, I'm describing it horribly. Bob has no idea.
The appeal there is that you didn't have to rewind, right?
No, you had to rewind. No, because it was the same thing like a tape, right? Did it play back? No,
it
flipped over.
That's right.
It
flipped over.
You couldn't fast forward or rewind, right? Is that right?
No.
I don't know.
312-981-7200. What are we misremembering about 8-tracks? I don't know why I did that to everybody. That's one way to walk a conversation to a dead end. Hey, here's something I don't know enough about. Let me start a conversation about it. When you guys are doing some sketch, do you find that like, okay, what is our, do you set out with a plan? Like, what is our intent in this scene?
I mean, a lot of times you're trying to, if you're making fun of somebody specifically, like Trump or somebody that's easy, we realize that we can't really, like, pull off necessarily a great impression. So we're just trying to make sure that we're getting the essence of his character, and then, you know, you go from there. But a lot of times we have our own original characters.
Yeah.
Like, you've got your regular guys, millionaires.
Regular millionaires.
Yeah.
They kind of talk like plumbers from Brooklyn, but they make, like, a $1 billion.
The millionaire plumbers?
Like, yeah, exactly. Like, I try to normalize... You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like people that are painted as villains in our society. Mm-hmm. Like, because, like, more than ever, you know, we are all, like, with all this, like, new technology, we're all such creeps. Like, we're just all ready to, like, jump on the next, like, that guy's not good. Everybody get him. You know? And it's, like, gets sort of weaker and weaker as you're passing from time to time. So I like to, at least, we have our medium on stage where we write things and we rehearse them and then we perform them. I feel like performing live is almost like, you know, it's even at live shows, I'm sure you notice this, people are on their phone a lot more, and that's just so, like, annoying. So we just want to, like, shake people awake from this stuff.
Give them their face a little bit. Kind
because of, they get really a barrage of information every day. And even, you know, you just said it yourself that you're sort of putting yourself on a diet or a hiatus from it because you're tired of hearing it. And of
or
course,
talking
you,
about it, right.
Or, yeah, I mean, so are we to some extent. And I think that's what's so fun about comedy is that you kind of get to take that subject and turn it into something that everybody can enjoy.
Yeah.
Right. And that's Laughing Liberally, which is the first Wednesday of every month at the Elbow Room. Tickets are only $5. It starts at 8 o'clock. This Wednesday is their relaunch on September 7th. And there'll be stand-up comedy. There's music. There's juggling. An interview with Maya Chenoir, the author of Locked Down, Locked Out, Why Prison Doesn't Work. And why we can be better. There's an article I was actually going to talk about after 1:30. Are you interested in this about prisons in the United States? Because there's an area of Indiana where they're sending more people to prison than they are like in the entire like bigger cities altogether because of meth and heroin addiction and things like that. And I've always, this is something that kind of gets me sometimes too. Like, I know the state of Illinois, when Governor Quinn was in office, he had signed a deal with private contractors, with the prison companies, to assure that there would be 90% occupancy in the prisons. So how do you achieve, how do you have a quota of people in jail?
You have to get customers.
Right. And then who are we going after? Because we talk a lot about how whether or not there is a prosecution and sentencing of people who are committing violent crimes. Mm-hmm. Is it then more, do you go after the people who are like the clear cut, like the drug, you know, offenses and things like that? So that's one of those things. I don't mean to. Anyway, I saw that story and I was like, what? So this sounds like an excellent interview with Maya Chenoir. And is she from Chicago?
I believe so, yeah. But I guess the positive thing, I don't know if you guys heard, wasn't the last week there was a reform federally, not in the states, that they can't have private prisons anymore. So that's, you know,
a move in the right direction.
They're weaning it off.
Yes, so hopefully that'll
I be think good. We should go after the real criminals, and that's people that stop walking when you're walking up
on the escalator.
Lock those people up.
Esmeralda and I were talking about pedestrian rage at the beginning of the show. Esmeralda,
I gotta go. I gotta catch the blue line. You're gonna stop walking? That's insane.
On the escalator?
Yeah.
Okay. Any sort of moving, whether it's a moving sidewalk or an escalator, people have got to understand. You stand on the right, you pass on the left.
Yes,
yeah.
Esmeralda's nodding. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is absolutely true. I can't. I this is the second time I've brought up public transportation and yelling at strangers.
Yes.
So you can see that I'm really passionate about this. So you should probably go ahead and make me an alderman, Chicago.
There you go.
Yeah, a lot of passion. Rebecca, when you're writing your music, do you separate yourself from how that's going to land with an audience? How do you approach your music writing?
Well, I don't know what you mean by
I mean, like, is it something, because I know with, like, a lot of artists, some people are really good about having sort of a schedule and I'm going to sit down and write this. And this is the message I want to convey. Comics, we get wrapped up in like, sometimes we'll think like, are they going to laugh at this? And you have to separate yourself. Do you sort of have to build a wall of like, this is the emotion I want to share?
A little bit. I think I've been sort of trying to step up my game a little bit and work on my performance and watching some performance coaching stuff. And I think that in doing so, I realize, most people would probably think I'm not very funny, but of course I think I'm very funny. So,
I think you're charmingly funny.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
I started this performance coaching stuff. I would go to shows to play them and just, you know, whip out these jokes that I, you know, off the cuff that are really, very, it's you don't know if I'm going to get a reaction or not.
Right.
And if I don't get a reaction, it kind of ruins my night. So, so what I've been doing is trying to like, be very serious in my rehearsal. And then when I get out there, I say the same stupid stuff, but then it's more like there's something about it where I'm not
even rehearsed it.
On it.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, whatever. They I'm being professional and serious. And then, so I don't know. I don't even know where I'm going.
Because
with
no,
this.
Because
I'm just rambling.
No, you're because what you're what you're not intending, but I think is probably the result is being accidentally funny is the way it comes across to the audience.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I think so. And you know,
I just saw Bonnie Raitt on Saturday. And I was blown away by the humor she had in between. And it was just sort of, but it was all throwaway, right? Without the same thing. And like she would kind of like, if she got a reaction, she would kind of stop. I don't know how much of that is, you know, 45 years of knowing, you know, what she could do. But she was really, I was so impressed by that. Cause I saw Dolly Parton too. Mm-hmm. And there were people in the audience complaining about how much chit chat there was in between.
Oh really?
Yeah. And,
She's
looking at her like, hey, give the lady a break. It's Dolly Parton. Right. She's bigger
Come
than
on,
life.
Come on, Dolly. Keep it moving.
Yeah. But I hadn't really thought of it.
My favorite part about doing that. I wish you could do that as a comedian in just the middle of your joke. Just be like, damn, girl. This is the part of the joke where you talk softly and just do that. Like, we can't do that on stage.
But I didn't realize until I saw them. And I saw Paul Simon, too. And he did He did some like sort of long, almost like monologue type stuff, like just sort of talking to the audience seriously. But obviously, Dolly's going to be very buoyant and really charming stuff, and Bonnie was very deadpan and it was succinct. But I didn't realize until you brought it up, till you mentioned that in between, it's also developing that relationship with the audience in a way that I had never really thought of for a solo performer.
Yeah, it's true, and I think that like just. Playing, you know, if you just play through your songs, a lot of people don't do banter. And unfortunately for me, I was told early on, you have to do banter. And I did a show and my friend.
Sounds like you resent that person right now, by the way.
I resent the rules, you know, like there aren't really rules per se.
Right.
And the idea that I have to do banter when like now that I'm older and wiser, I see that many people don't do that much banter and they do just fine. You know, they put on a really good show. But anyway, I do think that banter is something I'm striving to be better at. And I think that overall in the past, I really sucked at, but I'm getting better at it. And I feel like I'm on a good road to banter.
Well, I like your banter right now.
Ooh.
This is bantering.
As long as you label it, like, hey, I'm bantering now.
Hey guys, we're going to banter.
Hey.
Let's rap.
My favorite music banter is when the songwriter tells me a story about where the song was written, where they're like, I was in Wilmette, Illinois. I split a pizza with a cougar. I broke out of the zoo. In the morning, the pizza was consumed and the cougar was dead. America! And then they just start their song.
Yeah. I like that you meant an actual cougar.
I know.
Yeah.
I thought he meant like
no, I was not like talking about an
older
woman.
Woman.
That'd be messed up.
Wow.
That singer would be arrested right away. I hope so, that it wouldn't be allowed to... to continue performing.
So what we've learned is that Bob will not be helping you with tweaking any of your banter.
Hook me up here. Like, I could have sold her song stories.
Well, it's the alternative, right? Sort of the
By
flip.
The way, musicians, I'll sell you song stories. So easy. WGN, I could be the news guy. I could be like, news on the march. WGN, ready for a new day.
I love that
to play.
I love that he just went to classic radio.
Yeah,
that was really good. Do they still play that? Oh, they do. That's good. Yeah.
Just WGN, I'll do the vintage news, just the new, old news, you know, that I was like stuff that already happened and then like, you know, spice it up.
I'd share pizza with a cougar.
Let's see what happens during the news. Why don't you two make that happen over there? Rebecca, thank you so much for joining us, and apologize to your husband, Oscar, who's been waiting in the green room this whole time.
Well, thank you for having me. This has been great.
Thank you so much. Again, she'll be at the Old Town School of Music on September 10th, and you can find all of her appearances and her music on her website. Her new EP is available at RebeccaHasso.com. That's Hasso with a J, J-A-S-S-O, Rebecca, traditional spelling. Thank you so much. We'll see you again soon. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. I'm joined by comedian James Vickery, who is appearing all week at the Zanies on Wells, Chicago's oldest comedy club. They've been there since 1979, and it's my home club. I'll be appearing there with him as well through Sunday night, with the exception of Friday night.
Right.
I'll be at, there's so many things going on. But yeah. James, what's your website?
I'm just on the social media.
It makes sense.
I know.
I don't even go to my own website
anymore. Yeah, I just don't.
I put essays there sometimes.
Yep. Do you?
So, yeah. So, Jimmy Vick?
Yeah, at the Jimmy Vick.
At the Jimmy Vick.
And you can find me, James Vickery, on Facebook.
And it's always good to. I'm so glad you're in town. How long are you in town for?
I'm here till the 12th.
Till the 12th.
Right after this little run here at Zanies.
Right.
I'll be back in October.
All right, then fine.
All right, settle down, people. I'll be
back. We miss you. Every third Wednesday of the month, you can catch Laughing Liberally at the Elbow Room. And what's the address there? Let people know who have never been to the Elbow Room. There are people who've never been.
Well, first of all, just so they know, it's the first Wednesday of
What did I say, the third?
The third, yeah, third. Just to make sure.
Oh, that's me. I do the third Monday. Oh, it's so many days in the month. The first Wednesday. Yes.
And you were double booked. We almost got you for this show. Maybe even that.
Well, I'm wondering if I can do some sketches with you guys.
Oh yeah, because yeah, even though it's funny on a different level to see our idiots like in wigs, you know, right. And everything, it'd be nice to actually have a real woman like do that show.
I've been called a real woman before. No, because I don't do political stand up comedy. Mm-hmm. I actually started out with the intent of being a political comic, mm-hmm. as a stand up, and it's rough because. You have to really stand behind everything you say and anything that comes at you from the crowd. I started out, oh gosh, this is how long ago I was doing it, with Jesse Helms had said that men who tested positive for HIV should be tattooed with glow in the dark ink with a skull and crossbones in their pelvic area.
Classic.
And so I had like a rant about that, and I felt good about it. And this woman came up to me after the show, and she was like, "Shame on you. Shame on you." And I was like, I didn't know what she was going to yell at me for. And she said that saying Jesse Helms' name in public validated everything he did. And I was like, you didn't hear the rest of what I said.
Yeah.
No. All right. So it was interactions like that where I realized I was better at autobiographical humor. Sure. And I try. I mean, like, but when you see comedy, there is comedy that is inherently political without it being direct, right? Like, I don't necessarily, like, when it comes to Donald Trump, for me, being of Mexican descent, my mother is from Mexico, we actually had her on the air and to ask her what she thought of his speech, his announcement, and she was just like, she was so unimpressed. Just like, he is a clown. And I was like, but he said that they'd send all their drug dealers. Well, if there wasn't such a big demand, which I think is a really good point, yeah. By the way, she's got a point there. Yeah. So every first Wednesday of the month, you have Laughing Liberally.
Sure.
And what can people expect? I know I've read a lot of this stuff, but you tell us.
Okay. Well, basically the show, I guess the best way to describe it is it's like mixing Saturday Live with The Daily Show, but we have no budget and we're nowhere near as talented as Jon Stewart. But basically it's something like that and a political variety show. But we have, as I think you mentioned before, a lot of stand-ups, Sarah Manning, Otter Jonas, and Kristen Ryan. Also, we have, I don't think I mentioned, I wanted to get the Microphone Misfits are going to be doing something.
There you go. I knew I was missing something.
They're
going to
be doing some hip-hop. They are amazing. They've done many shows with us, legends in Chicago. So come out just to see them alone is definitely worth it. And then, of course, we have Brad French, which is the juggler extraordinaire.
Ask if he runs and juggles.
Yeah, so he might be the guy that was running. But yeah, he's amazing. And then, of course, we'll do a few political sketches. And Matthew Filipovich will actually be doing a parody of, I don't know if I should give this away, the parody of Jump Around, the House of Pain song to, you know, Trump Around. So, and he dresses
gotcha.
Up, and it's pretty fun. You can check that out online, too, if you look up Trump Around. And he'll be doing some stand-up, too. And, yeah, so there's plenty for everybody, for the whole family, fun for the whole family. Actually,
21 and over, I'm guessing.
Maybe we should have the kids come. That actually, they would probably be getting very disturbed by us. But, yes.
What drew you to political humor? It sounds like you've been doing that for quite a while.
Man, it just seems like once we started doing sketch, like Matthew Filipovich and I actually started in the late 90s together. And as we were writing sketches and stuff, it just felt like we have this stage and to just do fluff, you know, just to do stuff like, you know, whatever easy jokes, whether it be about relationships or be about, you know, the McDonald's or whatever it is, we wanted to like get to a point where it's like, let's do something that makes us feel like we're doing something at least a little bit important, you know, at least part of it. Even though most of the time we're just falling on our butts and acting like idiots, but occasionally we can feel like, you know, let's do something more important. I think also, real quick, I mentioned The Daily Show. That's probably why, too, because it was really starting to take off in the late 90s, right when we were starting to really do sketch. And I think that was a huge influence, too. So
very cool. Yeah, no, I mean, and how about you, Bob? Have you always been drawn to more political, or is it
I think
an
it's
aspect?
A good mixture of both. I really like absurd humor a lot. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, our politics have just gotten more and more absurd over the years, and the climate of said politics. And I've always been this way, and I would even do that like during class. Like, just, like, kind of interrupt. And I think it's now we at least interrupt in a venue in front of audiences.
Well, that's the thing about comics, and in particular political comics, is it's about being disruptive. It's about shaking things up and making people unsure what's going to happen next.
It's hard in a comedy club, though. You know, your show, people are kind of coming with the idea of at least what kind of political humor they're going to get in. Like, when you come out, you know, no one knows nothing about you on stage, and you bring up something, you could feel like tension rise. And even if it's not, someone might agree with you, but they're tense about the people around them, and it's tough.
I really eat those moments up. I love that collective feeling that somebody has sort of been forced to think about something that's really going on in the world.
Well, it's amazing how angry they can get about it.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm like, I'm 5'6" easily, so there's not a lot of room for bravery there. there's a term for people that are brave in 5'6".
Napoleon complex?
It's called sidekicks. You know.
Yeah.
We stand next to the taller guy and take none of the credit. That's great.
That's funny that you say that. My dad was about 5'4", and his best friend was a firefighter who was about 6'2". And it was always – but the thing is that the sidekick always has the bigger personality, right? It's just that they're not the imposing figure.
That's why when you brought up Paul Simon is my man. Like, he put the 5'5" musician on the map. That guy makes me look tall.
He was
all about it.
Robin didn't have a lot of personality.
That's true. No. Not at least not on the TV series.
No.
He was cute though. I had a crush on
Burt Ward.
Yeah,
they're actually coming out with a
animated
Batman Robin. Yeah, animated.
And they're
cartoon.
Doing the voices, right?
Burt Ward That's and awesome. Adam West coming back.
And Catwoman, isn't she?
And Catwoman, yeah.
Which one? Yeah.
Eartha Kitt's
dead, right?
Yeah.
Look how blunt I was. Dead.
Can't get her.
2006 has been a year, man.
Or 16.
Yeah. Or 2016.
Wow, you should go back 10 years.
All right. It's revealed that I'm actually a time traveler. Yeah. I don't know
run,
anything.
Quick run.
Well, by the way, thank you, James, for sending this article. I couldn't find – I mentioned this earlier that there was some company that had put out ads, and it was Wells Fargo who have – they're putting out print ads promoting a teen financial education day, but they're emphasizing that science is more important than the arts in these ads. And basically saying an actor yesterday, a botanist today. Each picture featured the tagline, let's get them ready for tomorrow. But I mean, on the other hand, that's what a lot of parents feel. I mean, my mom, you know, I wanted to be an actress when I was in high school, and then I got a degree in history, and it turned out that it wouldn't have made any difference. I probably should have gone ahead and studied theater.
Every parent dreams of their child coming home to, you know, the lucrative career of botany.
Yeah.
It's a very good point that you make, but I was fascinated by the. It is kind of, you know, there. How do you put one above the other? We know that the arts are important,
right? You definitely need both.
You definitely need both.
That's big talk from a bank that's usually found in a jewel. Come on, man. Like, of all the banks,
TCF? I think it's TCF that's in the jewel. I know that.
Oh, yeah. What was your... Oh, Wells Fargo.
Wells Fargo. Okay.
That's like the bank that I'm not like... I feel like I don't have enough money to bank there.
And I always feel like there should be... There's actually a wagon because I always think of Music Man. Wells Fargo is a come and run. little Ronnie Howard. No? Nobody?
Right.
Yeah, there have been... you know what? When we come back, we will talk... You know, do we end the show on talking about prisons? I don't think that's a that seems like a little bit. Heavy. Let's do it now then instead, because I mentioned that there's a prison. There's an area of Indiana that is there's a small Indiana county that sends more people to prison than San Francisco and Durham, North Carolina combined. And here's one of the one that caught my attention was a story about this guy named Donnie. He tried to sell 15 oxycodone pills to an undercover officer. If he'd been caught 20 miles to the east in Cincinnati, he would have received a maximum of 6 months in prison, right? That would have been his sentencing. In this town in Indiana, in Lawrenceburg, Indiana, in Dearborn County, after a plea deal, he agreed to a plea deal 12 years.
That's a terrible plea deal.
The attempt... I don't mean to laugh at that, but it is a terrible, and it's a mostly, and this is happening in American prisons across the country in mostly white, rural, and politically conservative areas.
Interesting.
It's very bizarre. I don't understand. There's a campaign to reduce mass incarceration, which is like, you know, they're trying to, which is leading to the decline of the prison population in big cities. Mm. But I mean, then are they forcing the pressure? And there's also a lot of the drug deal epidemic in places like with heroin. There's a lot of, and there's a big concern in these communities, like, hey, you got to clean this place up. So I was just fascinated by that. I think it's kind of a scary thing.
Yeah,
when I told you that it was supposed to be 90% occupancy in the state of Illinois, I mean, I did the joke. People get uncomfortable when I say that on stage. I mean, we get back to politics on stage. I said, what is it like when you get pulled over? I'm sorry, officer, is there a problem? Yeah, we have an empty bed.
Right.
He's sort of like, vacancy. I don't, I mean, does anybody else have that anxiety of being wrongfully imprisoned? Did I watch too many Lifetime movies?
Oh, no, I've been feeling that more lately with just all the horrible stories we've been hearing recently. And it's like, yeah, I see a cop behind me and I'm just like, I don't know if I got my license plate stickers right. Oh, let me, you know, like, just the stupidest, smallest thing. I feel like I'm going to get in huge trouble now. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like I could, I thought I could talk my way out of anything. You know, feel pretty. Did I tell you this is kind of related?
Yes.
I got a ticket for talking on my cell phone about a year ago.
In Chicago?
In Chicago.
Nobody ever gets that ticket, James.
I know. And I have to give
you. You've gotten that ticket? Chris? Oh, I don't know.
Well, I have to give you the context. So this was the craziest thing. And I told the officer this. I was talking to my brother on the phone because I just left my father in hospice. I still had the guest thing on me. And I told it, I was like, there's no way. And when I tell him why I was on the phone and where I just left, and no such thing.
No go?
Yeah.
Can
no
I,
go.
I feel like giving you a moment.
I wish I knew his name. I'd say it on the air.
In every pocket I have, you've seen me walk into rooms and still on the phone and not know.
Yeah.
Yeah, just talking to myself. I Bluetooth it everywhere I go, even like when I'm just on the phone. Because I'm afraid of that too.
Oh, yeah, no. I don't normally do it, but
no, I understand. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you one of my Bluetooth.
I'm very judged about
how dare you.
But I see people do it all the time. That's why I was so surprised to find out there are people who get a ticket for that. I don't know. I have not talked my way out of a ticket in a long time. Last time I got pulled over was, I think, in Arlington Heights. But I was doing like 12 over. 12 over, I think, isn't it like the 8 over the speed limit is kind of the...
A little cushion.
Yeah, yeah, a little bit, and then it's like then you have like 3 miles per hour. But then once you hit 12, then it's like the
all bets are
it's
off.
All like driving school again. But by the way, I think that we should all get a refresher course in driver's ed, not just when you get a ticket.
Totally agree.
I think like every 10. What do you think? Every 10 years.
But that should be everything.
Everything.
Yep.
Yeah. Like, come on.
Like standing in line at the grocery store.
If this election cycle has taught me anything, is that we all need to
civics
retake
classes?
History every
some history
4 years.
Yeah. Exactly. Like,
I think that would be great, like all online courses, you know, in order to what though? What would we be fined for not taking
just
refresher
be
courses?
In your house or something.
Get
and I just
on some stuff?
Yeah, but then it's like going to your room. It's like I've got great stuff in my room.
Yeah, that's true. You're like, it's fine. I don't want to go outside anyway.
I can binge watch anything I want right now. I'm gonna watch every episode of Psych again. I've heard it both ways. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. James Vickery, comedian James Vickery. He's performing at Zany's on Wells. You can go to zanys.com for ticket information. I'll be performing with him as well, along with Vince Moranto. This Wednesday, launching their every first Wednesday of the month, we have Tim Grimes and Bob Rock, who are doing Laughing Liberally at the Elbow Room. And I want to thank Rebecca Hasso, who was here earlier. And before we go, we were talking earlier about this being the very first day of school for CPS. And Esmeralda, like the first day of school with all of your new equipment, right? New fresh start.
Exactly.
It's some
Trapper Keeper.
Trapper Keeper. Trapper Keepers are high end now. There's like, they've got like, they have a handle on them, like a briefcase. Did your really? Trapper Keeper have a?
No.
Yeah. This is like, you can put all your different subjects in there and everything. I do like the tools, but $100 algebra calculator? Who needs that? I don't
know. How else are you going to play Drug War? Which is what I would do so much.
What?
My mom was so mad. She was like, did I really just, that is five shifts at Barnum and Bagel to like get me a TI-83.
I miss Barnum and Bagel.
I missed that. And now it's a Pita Inn though. So.
There's a Pita, it's a massive Pita Inn.
Massive Pita
I've
Inn.
Never been to the Pita Inn.
It's delicious.
Is it?
I like eating meat off of a stick. If you put that in the window, I'm going to eat at your restaurant.
Yeah, I think that's, and rotating meat is always good too. If you're going to rotate that meat, that's mm-hmm. that's good as well. What was your favorite place to eat in Skokie? Having grown up around the area,
place to eat in Skokie, probably that or Grecian Kitchen, which I would always call Grecian Chicken.
Mm-hmm. That makes
just
sense.
Out of habit.
Did you like Poochie's hot dogs?
Poochie's was awesome. the guy that would work at Poochie's was always like really angry, but really happy to see me at the same time.
Aww.
It was like a nice
confusing moment for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
good.
I
could eat anything back then. That was awesome.
I know. Remember those days? James, growing up, what were your favorite places in your neighborhood? What neighborhood again?
Southwest Side, Garfield mm-hmm. Ridge, Nicky's. Mm-hmm. They actually just got written about in the Tribune a couple weeks ago because they have this big baby. Double cheeseburger.
Mm-hmm.
It's been around forever. It's kind of a compete with the Big Mac. And it's still going. Yeah. Double cheeseburger there. Nicky's, Archer and Austin.
There you go. Now, Tim, yours is more complicated because would we say there's a place growing up in Bloomington Normal or in Gilman? Or
oh, man. I'll just go with Bloomington Normal because I just remember loving Shakey's.
Shakey's. Sure, sure.
It was like basically the before Chuck E. Cheese and all that stuff blew up. You just watch a big screen of Three Stooges and Little Rascals with your little styrofoam
aww.
Hat and eat pizza for your birthday party.
So your town was founded by John Hughes, so there'd be extras for all of his movies.
Oh, yes.
That's what it sounds like. You want to tell the Tim Grimes story.
I think that works. Esmeralda Joliet, what was it, one of your favorite places to eat growing up?
It still is White Fence Farm.
White Fence Farm.
Yeah, White Fence Farm.
Mm-hmm.
Chicken place?
Is it like a diner?
Yeah, fried chicken. Their motto is world's greatest chicken.
Dan Long, where did you grow up?
I'm from the southwest suburbs, Orland Park.
And what was your big place to go to? What was it? What got you excited to go eat?
Oh, you know what? You're putting me on the spot. What am I not excited to?
I know. I was trying to think. Like, my place is closed. The Niagara hot dogs on Northwest Highway was because it was right by my place. Did you have like a hot dog joint that everybody hung out at?
I mean, I was fortunate enough to grow up in a world where Portillo's has branched out into the suburbs. So
see, that's a good thing.
Can't go wrong there.
Yeah. Oh, Portillo's.
Chocolate cake.
I know. That place is, it's so weird. It's the, you walk in there and the choices, they're like, do I go beef? Do I go hot dog? And you know, oddly enough, sometimes salad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Salad.
And an oddly massive margarita. Have you ever ordered one of them?
I've never had a Portillo's margarita.
Yeah. They were the one. I was out at the one all the way out like in Vernon Hills. And it was I was like, this is illogical. I should not be having this hot dog with this massive size of my head margarita. So you go with Portillo's as your joint when you were growing up. I also grew up near Superdog, which I just had someone tell me that they were not a fan of. And I understand that. But you don't, you know, keep your anger to the others. I like shoving it in that box. All the fries and your green. I don't know why there's a green tomato.
I loved Flukies.
Flukies is good too.
Best.
That's on Western Avenue?
Western Avenue. They would give you the little hot dog bubblegum. Mm.
Hot dog bubblegum.
And I would always order cream of broccoli soup because I was the lamest kid
that had
ever grown up in Chicago.
What's your soup
of the
day?
You and the old lady just ordered that, but go ahead.
Yeah, enjoy. I want to thank Tim Grimes and Bob Rock from Laughing Liberally every first Wednesday of the month at the Elbow Room. Showtime is at 8 o'clock. Tickets are $5. And go have a good laugh. Go see what see what stories there are to tell. Vic Vaughn, before we go, what's your place that you growing up that you loved eating at?
Pablo's Mexican Restaurant.
Where's that?
It was growing up a little town outside of Oakland, California.
Pablo's.
They used to raise a little Mexican flag up, or you could raise it up when you wanted something, and then come over and give it a lot of fun.
I love that.